once. Shame on you. It's fooled me. We can't get fooled again.
People think I'm a moron. What if they only knew the depth of my evil genius? And I can be stupid whenever I need to, yeah. In my midnight confessions, I reveal my imperial secrets. I'm the master of misdirection with a few intellectual defects. There's a little rubber boom I keep in my hand. You better understand. If and when I show bullshit, the warheads will fly. Kiss the planet goodbye.
I'm a threat to the American people.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The Service Employees International Union unanimously endorsed a resolution calling for an end to the U.S. occupation of Iraq. 4,000 delegates, who represent more than 1.6 million members, voted on the resolution at the union's national convention this past weekend. The resolution also asked that soldiers are provided with adequate veterans' benefits and health care. Many delegates said they voted for the resolution to promote the domestic needs of working people who make up the bulk of the armed services.
On Wednesday, No Sweat Apparel rolled out its new activist-themed line of sneakers. The first special edition sneaker is a code pink high top in partnership with the D.C.-based feminist anti-war group. Workers earn wages 25% higher than the regional minimum wage. All workers receive a rice allowance based on family size and are given 100% health insurance, travel, maternity, burial, clothing, and retirement benefits. One thing that makes these shoes special is the fact sheet inside the box of the wages and benefits paid to the lowest paid worker. Adam Neiman, co-founder and chief executive of No Sweat Apparel, traveled to Nike headquarters to present Philip Knight with a free pair of sneakers and demand that Nike follow No Sweat's lead.
And they were very nice and they were very nervous, and she said, "Oh, we can't possibly do this. We have sneakers in warehouses. Sometimes they sit there for 6 months to a year." And they said, "Caitlin, all you have to do is put a date on the thing and a disclaimer saying that this information is accurate as of this date." Well, she had no answer for that.
The new sneakers can be purchased at nosweatsneaker.com.
Travelers seeking to cross the United States and Canadian border this weekend should expect added congestion. Canada Customs officers are creating a slowdown at the border to protest federal delays in reviewing pay claims. In 2000, the duties of some officers were expanded to give them the power of arrest. The union says there has been no pay raise to compensate for the added responsibility and risk. The officers are handing out leaflets to motorists explaining their position. Traffic at the border is expected to be heavy as Canada celebrates its Independence Day today. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Even with unemployment growing at a steady rate, it will be some time before working families get to share in the benefits of the new economy. The reason is the drop of real wages from an average of $15.81 per hour in November 2003 to $15.64 in May 2004. The last time wages were at that level was in November of 2001. The main culprit in the lack of wage growth is the residual effect of being in the longest jobless recovery on record. It will take many more months of steady job growth before employers are willing to reverse the trend.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find AMIBA online at amiba.net.
One of the greatest music joints in my town of Austin, Texas, was Liberty Lunch, which regularly featured up-and-coming local musicians as well as such national talents as Taj Mahal. This bar, cafe, and music yard was inexpensive, adventuresome, laid-back, unique, and, well, it was Austin. I say was because it's gone. A few years ago, our mayor gave taxpayer subsidies to lure something called CSC Corporation to town, giving it the spot of city-owned land that Liberty Lunch had rented for years. So now, we have a cold six-story building housing a high-tech military contractor that has no roots in Austin, is not in character with our city, and offers nothing to our way of life. What we do not have are the good eats, good sounds, and good spirit that emanated every night from that spot, drawing thousands of enthusiastic customers and helping define Austin for people everywhere. Austin is hardly alone in suffering a steady erosion of our homegrown businesses to impersonal corporate giants, big box stores, and cookie cutter chains. It's probably happening where you live, too. No one voted for this, but these giants get public subsidies, wield massive advertising budgets, and have deep pocket financing and the political clout to bully their way in, remaking our communities in their own bland, self-serving image. But you and I don't have to support them. Let's assert our own grassroots buying power to proclaim a new economic independence. A group called AMIBA, American Independent Business Alliance, has organized the Indy Challenge, urging we the people to rediscover the local businesses that make our town special, from coffee shops to restaurants, bookstores to hardware stores, pharmacies to farmers markets. This is Jim Hightower saying, we have the power. Ask your friends, families, clubs, churches, unions, and local governments to join you in using their dollars for community self-determination. For help, call AMIBA, 406-582-1255.
How to load the family vehicle for a 4th of July vacation. Step 1. Measure the allotted cubic feet of storage space. Step 2. Measure the cubic feet of family possessions to be loaded into said storage space. Step 3. At all costs, avoid saying the 7 unmentionable words. Your 3-year-old will just end up repeating them for the entire drive. This holiday road tip is brought to you by Geico. Stay alert, drive safe, save money.
You think I'd maybe had some Bush's phases? Maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus on keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doc.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine, really.
No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other brand. Carrier, turn to the experts.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And greetings, friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Tom Hartman here, broadcasting live on terrestrial radio stations from California to North Carolina, streaming down from the depths of outer space on the Sirius satellite system, and beaming around the planet on the internet via radiopower.org, Apple's iTunes, and various other venues. You know, this immigration thing is it's really fascinating to watch this and see people try and split it out as a left-right thing. Is it a Republican issue? Is it a Democratic issue? Is it conservative? Is it liberal? Yeah, what's going on? What's going on with this whole issue of immigration? Angelo Paparelli is an expert on immigration law. He's founding partner of the California-based Paparelli and Partners LLP, a firm of lawyers who practice extensively in the field of U.S. immigration and nationality law. He's also a prolific writer. He's been published in numerous trade publications and recently co-authored the immigration chapter on the International Practitioners Desk Book Series. These are a book for lawyers published by the ABA. And, Angelo, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Thank you, Tom. I'm glad to be with you.
In your news release, or whatever it was here that you sent out, whatever you want to call this thing, you said there's nothing wrong with hiring foreigners for American jobs. In fact, it actually helps American corporations.
Well, I think it helps American workers as well as American corporations and American consumers. My view is that so much has been said, so much noise about illegal immigration, that what we forget is that the backbone of our immigration system is an employment-based legal immigration system. And lately, There has been a lot of focus given to the concept of offshoring, and I think it's been unfortunate that immigration has been mixed up with this, because as I would see it, offshoring is an outbound phenomenon, and immigration is an inbound jobs creating phenomenon. And I think that with a little conversation from you, I agree that this is not a left-right issue, but this is an issue about waking up and doing what's in America's economic self-interest.
But, you know, aren't those really apples and oranges? I mean, the folks who are, you know, advocating greater immigration or opposed to greater immigration, and the larger issue, which is the one that the Republicans certainly this year are trying to turn into a wedge issue, which is really, in my opinion, thinly veiled, you know, appeal to the racist vote, basically, illegal immigration. I mean, that issue and those folks and that really has nothing to do with offshoring of jobs. I mean,
I agree with you completely.
Okay.
But
so,
to the degree that offshoring is a problem, it's part of the global trading system. And
so why don't we fix the system?
Well, okay, we can talk about some fixes, but it's a phenomenon that American consumers like the lowest cost goods, and that we do better when we export goods and services to a greater degree than we import. And what I'm trying to say is that immigration should not be tarred with the offshoring label, because they're distinct, and I agree completely with you.
Okay, well then let's say that it's not. But you for example, you're suggesting that, you know, here's a question: why does immigration provide an immediate solution to worker shortages? What worker shortage?
Oh, there are plenty of worker shortages. If you look in the healthcare field, if you look in teaching, if you look in some of the high-end engineering fields, what we are seeing is that the current U.S. population in the science and engineering fields are approaching retirement age, more than the majority of them are going to have an average age of 40, and American students are not studying to the same degree as in the past, and we may be falling behind as a world.
Then why don't we fix that? I mean, we've got millions. You've got roughly 10 million unemployed Americans right now. My son is working on his master's degree in an engineering field or a science field in biology, and looking out at the job prospects out there, it's really a scary world. I mean,
tell him to come to San Diego. Bioscience is really booming. I don't think it's as scary as you suggest. I think that these are not overnight fixes of people
but why not study. Why not look at the 10 million unemployed Americans and the 30 or 40 or some would say as many as 60 million underemployed Americans and say, let's do something about that. If there are in fact shortages, job shortages in particular niche markets, why don't we get more of our own people trained for this?
Well, I agree. Let's do that. But as I said, that's not an overnight solution. And the work needs to be done today and not in a year or two when the training program ends.
You know, there's a lot of people who you mentioned teaching. There are a lot of people who have left teaching simply because it doesn't pay well. Why not? I mean, the argument, for example, that I hear from folks who are saying, well, you know, we've got to do this guest worker visa thing and we need to bring more immigrants into the United States, is because there's all these jobs that no American will do. And we actually had a guy who owns a winery in California call in one day, and he said, you know, I've got a whole bunch of illegals working for me here, and they're willing to work for $5 an hour or $6 an hour. You know, it's basically minimum wage. He said, I can't find local folks who will work for $5 an hour. And I said, well, what would happen if those illegals were not available to you? And he said, well, I'd have to pay probably $7 or $8 an hour to get local people to do it. And I said, and what would that do to the cost of your wine? And he said, well, you know, $20 a bottle of wine might go up in cost by 30, 40 cents. I said, is that going to make a big difference? Well, probably not. I mean, why don't we just fix the problems that we have internally?
I think that this is an illustration of a misunderstanding about legal immigration. Because, again,
okay,
I'm trying to focus on the legal side. The teaching profession If you're going to bring in a teacher, a school district has to pay the prevailing wage for that job. They're not undermining in prices. And if America is going to say that teachers should be paid more, I'm all for that. I think it's embarrassing what we do with our educational system and the way teachers are compensated. But until there is a general consensus that tax dollars should be shifted from war to education, we need to deal with the system we have.
But why not work to build that consensus rather than working to build a consensus of, okay, let's bring more people into the United States to take these jobs, and we got, 10 million unemployed, we got 30, 40 million underemployed, screw them.
Oh, that's not what I'm saying at all. I'm saying that there should be a consensus around getting teachers better compensation. That's not the issue, though. The issue is children need to be educated today, and we can't wait for their education till that consensus is built. I'm not saying that people who are unemployed or underemployed should be ignored. I think much of what needs to be done is redirecting our tax dollars to worker training, worker education. All of the studies say that today people will be engaging over their lifespan in perhaps three or four careers. And so it's a commitment on the part of the individual to continue to be re-educated in new fields.
But isn't that a symptom of a system that's breaking down? I mean, after in 1935 we had the Wagner Act, which made unionization legal. We had the growth of the middle class in America that hit its high point in the first year of the Reagan administration, and then this whole conservative agenda of cheap labor, reduce the cost of labor, increase profits for corporations came along, and now we're seeing essentially the breakdown of this social contract that we had throughout certainly my parents' generation and the world I was growing up in the 50s and 60s, that said that if you play by the rules, you can make it. You can raise a family, you can put your kids through school, you can have health care, you can retire. I mean, what has happened to that social contract? Shouldn't we really be looking at that rather than looking at? I mean, I realize you're an immigration attorney, and the old saying, if the only tool you have is a hammer, every problem looks like a nail. But don't you think that there are larger issues here than just this?
Well, I think that you are right that we have seen a deterioration in the social contract, but we cannot look at America in isolation. That same deterioration in the social contract now exists in Japan, where people had lifetime employment guaranteed and they no longer do. It exists in Germany and France, where they increasingly are finding it unaffordable to have the social welfare programs that were part of the German parents or the French parents' generation.
Well, increasingly they're finding it unaffordable because they're adopting the same kind of economic policies we are. In countries like Sweden that have rejected those policies, or Norway, you don't find that. That's not happening.
Well, Norway and Sweden are homogeneous populations where they don't have the same kind of challenges associated with cultural diversity that we have in America. I would say that our cultural diversity is a strength, and we have had a history of using immigration laws to bring in the best and the brightest scientists and entertainers and educators. And I agree with you about that point, that if all you have is a hammer, you see things as needing a hammer to fix the problem. But that is not an appropriate response to say that the world is collapsing and we can't do anything about the current day's problems unless we fix these huge systemic problems. I'm suggesting, just as Alan Greenspan has said, that immigration can be part of the solution. He has said, for example, that...
Well, wait a second. Alan Greenspan has also suggested that his most important job is to maintain a certain level of worker insecurity so that we will not have wage inflation in the United States.
I
mean, this is the core of the...
I don't recall hearing him say it quite so bluntly.
He used that phrase, it was June 17, 1997, the Wall Street Journal. And he's been quoted a number of times and saying very, very similar things, but he's talked about worker insecurity a number of times. He just lays it right out there and says, raise interest rates.
That doesn't mean the point that he made that I was about to restate is incorrect. It may be that he has a point of view. But what we are facing is a future looming deficit in the Social Security Trust Fund. We are facing an aging population and a population cohort behind them of younger people who are not as large in number as the boomers.
You know, the Social Security Trust Fund is solvent right now, other than the fact that the Bush administration is spending it, is solvent through 2038. And if we were to increase the tax on it by 1%, it would be not only solvent, but plus, you know, profitable forever. I mean, isn't that an easier fix than saying, well, let's bring in immigrants who aren't, you know, going to have to draw from Social Security? I'll give you a chance to answer that after this break. We're talking with Angelo Paparelli, Paparelli & Partners, LLP, an immigration attorney in California. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. Our number, by the way, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to weigh in. We'll be right back.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
When I think about getting older, it's not dying I worry about, it's living and being buried under a pile of medical bills I can't pay for.
Healthcare costs are soaring. Millions more Americans are uninsured, and those who have coverage are paying more out of pocket. Yet President Bush offers no plan to curb costs, and his new Medicare law would actually ban the government from negotiating lower prices from drug companies.
The cost of these drugs, it's very scary.
Do you want to find out what the invasion of Iraq was really about? Read the new illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Once you've read We the People, you'll understand why conservatives are trying to bankrupt government and how perpetual war is used as a political strategy in the United States. You'll learn how our votes are in danger and what we must do about it. You'll discover why the Alien and Sedition Acts of 1798 matter today. Populist watchdog and national radio commentator Jim Hightower had this to say about We the People.
Not only does this book tell you what's really going on, but it even draws you a picture of it. Read, learn, and act.
We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. A compelling story of how a government by and for the people has been replaced by corporate domination. fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People issues a call to action in a most entertaining way. Available in bookstores everywhere.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Come together right now over me.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. We're talking with Angelo Paparelli. EnterTheUSA.com, his website. He's an immigration attorney. And, you know, I've got to say, Angelo, that first of all, I think.
Can I respond to your last point?
Yeah. In fact, I want you to in just a second. First of all, we've got a call or two, and we've only got about 4 minutes in the segment. But I just want to say, just, you know, for the record, I don't disagree with you that we should allow immigration in the United States. My parents, my grandparents were immigrants on my father's side of the United States, and on my mother's side in the 1600s, they were immigrants to the United States. So, you know, or the early 1700s. So, you know, I mean, unless you're a Native American, we're all immigrants, right? You, me,
sure are.
Probably 95% of the people listening to this program, 90, probably more than that. So I'm not overtly opposed to that. What really flipped my button was here when you said, oh, this is actually going to help American corporations. Listen, it just seemed like part of that agenda. Now, let's take Chuck's call from New Mexico, and then you can respond to that, and you can respond to my comment. And it's 25 minutes past the hour. Chuck, you're live and on the air. What, at Santa Fe, New Mexico?
Yes. I actually run about a 20-person software company. It's very, very high-tech. And I have to say that both of you should not disagree. You are both on the same page. For a long-term solution, Tom, you're absolutely right. But we have a short-term shortfall.
Mm-hmm.
And if we want to avoid these jobs going completely overseas, I have people from Austria, from Sri Lanka, from you name it, and they're all masters in electrical engineering, and they all work for me. And mostly what we sell, we actually sell to large corporations, which brings money back into New Mexico. Now, having said that, I think it's important to realize that a lot of large corporations believe, and I know that this is going to surprise you, in home growing their own engineering. Because at the end of the day, it's less expensive. I mean, not at the beginning of the day, but at the end of the day.
Sure.
So we've got a short-term problem and a long-term problem, and I think both you and Angelo are both completely right.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Chuck. I appreciate the comment. Angelo, you want to respond to that and also to the comment I made just before we went to the break?
It's wonderful when a real-world caller comes in and illustrates the point I'm trying to make. So I thank the caller. But regarding your earlier suggestion of the Social Security system and all we have to do is add 1%, if you add a 1% charge to a shrinking base of workers, you're going to break their backs because that 1% is going to grow to a higher percentage. And again, I'm talking about a part of the solution. I'm not talking about the entire solution. It may be that increasing at a certain level, a certain number of workers, perhaps the highest earning workers, might make good sense. But and I'm also happy, Tom, that you understand the value of immigration. If we had the attitude of fear that we have too many engineers in this country out of work, Andy Grove might not have come here and formed Intel Corporation.
Yeah, no, I'm not promoting that. I used to own an ad agency down in Atlanta, the Chandler McDonald, Stout, Schneiderman & Poe, and we had a client that wanted us to do a newsletter in Japanese, Spanish, and English, and I had to find an artist, a graphic artist, who was fluent in Japanese and Spanish, and we actually found this guy. His name was Shinji. He was his parents were Japanese. He was born in Lima, Peru. He spoke Spanish. And I had to jump through 6 months of hoops to get him a visa so that he could work for us, because he was looking for a job, right, and he had to have the visa.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to prove to the government that I couldn't find anybody who was an American who could do that. Okay, so, you know, I've been there with you in what you're doing.
Good.
But I just don't think that we should be thinking that this is the solution to the very large societal problems that we're facing here in the United States. I'll give you the last 20 seconds.
I don't mean to suggest that.
Okay. Well, then I guess we're probably more in agreement.
What I mean to suggest is it's an immediate, quick fix to a problem that is very real that cannot be ignored. And when we get to those larger problems, immigration's role may be less, but not today.
Yeah. Okay. Well said. www.enterTheUSA.com. Angelo Paparelli, thank you very much for being with us today.
I enjoyed it. Happy to come back anytime.
Thanks. Thank you very much. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. More than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The Service Employees International Union unanimously endorsed a resolution calling for an end to the U.S. occupation of Iraq. 4,000 delegates, who represent more than 1.6 million members, voted on the resolution at the Union's National Convention this past weekend. The resolution also asked that soldiers are provided with adequate veterans' benefits and health care. Many delegates said they voted for the resolution to promote the domestic needs of working people who make up the bulk of the armed services.
On Wednesday, No Sweat Apparel rolled out its new Act This Theme line of sneakers. The first special edition sneaker is a Code Pink high top in partnership with the DC-based feminist anti-war group. Workers earn wages 25% higher than the regional minimum wage. All workers receive a rice allowance based on family size and are given 100% health insurance, travel, maternity, burial, clothing, and retirement benefits. One thing that makes these shoes special is the fact sheet inside the box of the wages and benefits paid to the lowest paid worker. Adam Neiman, co-founder and chief executive of No Sweat Apparel, traveled to Nike headquarters to present Philip Knight with a free pair of sneakers and demand that Nike follow No Sweat's lead.
And they were very nice and they were very nervous. And she said, oh, we can't possibly do this. We have sneakers in warehouses. Sometimes they sit there for 6 months to a year. And they said, Caitlin, all you have to do is put a date on the thing and a disclaimer saying that this information is accurate as of this date. Well, she had no answer for that.
The new sneakers can be purchased at nosweatsneaker.com.
Travelers seeking to cross the United States and Canadian border this weekend should expect added congestion. Canada Customs officers are creating a slowdown at the border to protest federal delays in reviewing pay claims. In 2000, the duties of some officers were expanded to give them the power of arrest. The union says there has been no pay raise to compensate for the added responsibility and risk. The officers are handing out leaflets to motorists explaining their position. Traffic at the border is expected to be heavy as Canada celebrates its Independence Day today. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Even with unemployment growing at a steady rate, it will be some time before working families get to share in the benefits of the new economy. The reason is the drop of real wages from an average of $15.81 per hour in November 2003 to $15.64 in May 2004. The last time wages were at that level was in November of 2001. The main culprit in the lack of wage growth is the residual effect of being in the longest jobless recovery on record. It will take many more months of steady job growth before employers are willing to reverse the trend.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
It's just time to pay the price. Not listening to advice. Deciding in your youth on the policy of truth.
And welcome. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 27 minutes, 26 and a half, precisely before the hour. Okay, yesterday in our chat room, by the way, if you want to get to our live chat room, you have a conversation with one of the most erudite bunch of people on planet Earth. Plus, I read it. And occasionally respond during the breaks. If you want to get into our chat room, go to www.tomhartman.com and click live chat or chat or whatever it is. And it'll take you over to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe and or the Democrats Forum on CompuServe and drop in there, push the chat button, and boom, you're in. Go to the Tom Hartman room. Anyhow, welcome back. Yesterday in the chat room, Marion had shared a little joke, and I can't pass it up. Before I get back into my rant about, you know, what's happening in the middle class in America, what role might immigration play with it, I just have to share this with you. A bar had a robot bartender put in, a computerized robot bartender. The guy comes in for a drink, and the robot asks him, "What's your IQ?" The guy says, 150. So the robot makes conversation with him about physics and philosophy and stuff like that. Guy says, "Hey, this is cool." So he goes out and he comes back again, and of course the robot's programmed. It says, "What's your IQ?" And he says, 100. And the bartender starts talking to him about football and stuff. So he goes to the bathroom, and this time when he comes back, again the robot bartender says, "What's your IQ?" And the guy says, he figures, well, let's find out what's going on. He says, 50. So the bartender says, "So, you going to vote for Bush again?" Need a drum roll there, don't we? And here's my take on the whole immigration thing. That and oddly, this is one of those areas where the conservative mantra actually has some truth to it, and that is that markets do balance themselves out over time. Now, of course, the cons take this concept to its extreme, which is to say, and therefore the market should rule everything. The market should be preeminent over everything. Forget the social contract, forget, you know, all this. But in any case, things do balance out over time. I mean, if there's a nurse shortage right now, for example, we have a good friend who's a nurse, and boy, is she making good money. I mean, she's like, I don't know, between $60,000 and $80,000 a year. She's working part time for a couple of different hospitals, so what's the result of that? Well, I know a couple of young people who are planning on going into nursing, you know, and one in particular. And so so then what happens if we say, okay, well, we have a shortage of nurses, so let's bring in nurses from overseas. And if we're thinking of them as like temporary disposable people, and really that's all they want, they just want to come over and work for 3 or 4 or 5 years and then leave, then I suppose there's not a problem. But if we're talking about immigration as opposed to, you know, guest worker visas, then what happens? You say, okay, we've got a shortage of nurses. Well, let's just bring in 100,000 nurses. There's a lot of qualified nurses in the Philippines or in Sweden or whatever. I mean, take your pick. And we're paying pretty good here. So we bring in a whole bunch of nurses. Well, first of all, if you bring in enough to fill the need, you're going to depress the labor price somewhat. But beyond that, I mean, this is going to cause two disequilibriums. Number one, there's that. But number two, what's going to happen 4 years from now when the kid I know who just went into nursing school graduates? And there's no nursing jobs because they're all filled by immigrants. So, you know, I just don't see immigration as the cure to our problems. I acknowledge it as a necessary thing. I am not a xenophobe. I'm not in favor of sealing our borders and saying no one can ever come in here again. You know, I'm not, this is nothing like that. But I really do believe that every nation has the government of a nation has an important role to play in providing for an appropriate quality of life for its people, for things like, you know, a living wage, Social Security, medical health insurance, things like that, retirement, and or demanding that of the private sector. And the easiest way, of course, to do that is to promote unionization, which is a somewhat a whole nother rant. But I just don't think that the answer to all of our problems is as simple as number one, bring in immigrants. Number two, outsource. So, anyhow, just a quick email here I got from Sheila apparently in Canada. Oh no, I'm sorry. This is a different one. Sheila, this is in the United States. Mentions I trained as a GM technician. See, I mentioned the CAFE standards yesterday. And she says, I trained as a GM technician and got my associate degree in the GM Automotive Service Education Program, and they told us about the CAFE law in class. CAFE stands for Corporate Average Fuel Economy. Thank you, Sheila. I didn't have that at the tip of my tongue yesterday when we were talking about it. So this is why we have computers in the car setting fuel injectors and timing and airflow and all that kind of thing. She said GM had to use computers to get the fuel economy to meet the CAFE laws. And she suggests that in her opinion and her understanding is that, for example, the Chevy Geo Metro is sold at cost, more or less, so that they can sell more Buick Park Avenues because they make more money on them. And yet, you know, hit the CAFE standards. So, anyhow, my question is, why don't we change the CAFE standards? 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Your thoughts on this or other topics, if you would like. Julian Madison, is that Madison, Wisconsin, is on the line?
Yes, Madison, Wisconsin.
Hey, Julie, welcome to the program. What's up?
Thank you very much, Tom. I sure enjoy your show. You're a great asset to us, the people out here in the United States. But I wanted to comment on your I'm on a 3-year waiting list here in Madison to get in the nursing program.
Mm-hmm.
It is just packed, and you know, by the time 3 years, I mean, this is my second career. I mean,
right.
Really, I'm in my 40s. By the time I finish and get established, I mean, it's, you know, it's a long haul.
Yeah.
But it's. You know, in my opinion, really, the Republicans have a very difficult time having solutions that are creatively based, that can actually, you know, have a solution. It's all the old, you know, the old replay of everything. Nothing solved. It's just more, you know, more of a mess, more chaos.
Yeah, well, see, and you're an example of how, you know, a need in the marketplace produces a response in the marketplace, and that's a healthy thing. I mean, that's you know, free enterprise in a way, and one of the things that build America. And yet, we can throw two kinds of major dislocation into that. Number one, we could, for example, as our guest suggested in the last half hour, we could simply bring in nurses from overseas. Boom. And then all of a sudden what happens when you graduate and there's no jobs there, right, after you've put all these years of work into it.
Right. Start over in something else.
Right.
Anyway, keep up the great work, Tom. Love you.
Okay. Thanks, Julie. Appreciate it. Or number two, the second option that the cons would suggest is don't allow those nurses to get unionized. We're having a big battle here in Vermont about this. I know that there's one going on in Michigan. I'm assuming they're happening all over the country where hospitals that used to be, it used to be in the United States, if you're gonna be involved in health care, if you're gonna be involved in taking care of people, that has to be your first priority. So hospitals used to be required to be nonprofit, as were health insurance companies, nonprofit, so that your first goal is actually to do what you're supposed to do. See, because a for-profit corporation's first goal is to make money. And the cons' other solution is, well, you know, don't allow. You know, get rid of the unions, get rid of, you know, don't allow the employees to have any say or any power, you know, punish whistleblowers, bloody, bloody, blah, you know, on through the whole conservative agenda thing there. And what do you get? Well, you know, you might have cheaper workers. And isn't that great for profits? I don't buy it. It's not good for society. It's not good for America. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, Roland in Milwaukee's on the line. Hey, Roland, what's up?
Yeah, hi. The reason I call, I love to listen to your show. I try to get the hours that I can on Sirius. I wish it was on the 3 hours instead of WIM, whatever. But anyway, the reason I called, I couldn't let it go when you were talking about jobs. There's three three basic job occupations that I've had the pleasure to or displeasure to engage in. I'm currently a truck driver, and I was a teacher for the last 10 years. And before that, I worked as an auto mechanic, ran a garage, and my wife is in nursing.
Okay. So all the fields we've talked about.
From a point of personal perspective, I think the problem with getting people for those jobs and why there's a shortage is the flaws in the job. The thing is, for an auto mechanic, it doesn't pay well. You have to buy thousands of dollars of tools, and you have to get constant education. For school teaching, I don't think you should be in it for the money. I think you need to have the heart and love the kids, because if you're in it for the money, it's not going to work.
But what's wrong with paying people a living wage?
Oh, no. I'm not saying that. I'm saying teaching doesn't pay that bad.
Yeah.
But what I'm saying is, for those that complain they don't get paid enough, teachers put a lot of their salary back into the job. They buy supplies. You know, they're constantly doing things like that.
Increasingly, yeah.
And that kind of makes it pay less. Plus, you know, they say teachers only work 6 hours a day, but from personal experience...
That's nonsense.
From September till June, it's relentless. You know, you never have a break. You constantly have papers to grade or something like that.
Yeah.
And so nursing, the reason there's a shortage of nurses is because hospitals have treated them like dog fodder for years.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think also there was... In the 80s, I suppose, there was sort of a backlash as more and more women came into the working. You know, I mean, it was this week in 1963 or 64 that the Civil Rights Act was passed that outlawed discrimination based on sex. And you know, that was tossed in at the last minute by a conservative as a joke. He was trying to say, you know, you're not going to be able to stop discrimination by race. Let's toss in sex too, and just make the whole thing show how silly it is, right? But it got passed into law and opened up a lot of opportunities for women. I mean, I remember when I was young, the newspaper used to say women wanted, men wanted. Those were the two sections in the help wanted section. It's illegal now, right?
So, yeah, but actually, in nursing, men are non-traditional in nursing.
Right, I know, but they're growing. My point is, I think that there were a lot of women who might have gone into nursing, but instead, if they want to go into medicine, they've become physician's assistants or they become doctors.
In fact,
more than 50% of the graduating class last year here at the University of Vermont Medical School was women.
Well, that's because those jobs get more respect.
Well, but see, 20, 30 years ago, that wouldn't have been the case. They would have all been in nursing. So I think that there's social kind of dislocations going on, and we just need to adapt to these. And as you said, I think one of the big issues is that nurses are treated very poorly, by in particular as our healthcare system becomes more and more geared toward profit and squeezing more and more out of every little. Potential profit sector, those and employees being, you know, a big one. So,
right.
Anyhow, Roland, thanks for the call. Great to have you listening to us
thanks
in Milwaukee.
For having me.
And thank you, and thanks for listening on the Sirius satellite there. 1-866-889-8894. Deborah in New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Deborah, what are your thoughts on this?
Hi, I just wanted to say that my sister has a master's degree in English, and her husband got transferred to New Mexico, and she came out to New Mexico. She cannot find a job because she's not bilingual.
Oh, that's interesting.
Yes, now, and I think that, you know, if the United States was going to become bilingual, they should have let us know that when we were still in school.
Well, but the reality is, Deborah, number one, we've got a terrible job market. So you could, I think, there's no shortage of people who will call this program and simply said, I can't find a job. And it's got nothing to do with being bilingual or not. They're just, you know, there's just not jobs out there. And number two, there are, you know, how can we ignore the fact that there are parts of the country where, you know, particularly around, southwest near the Mexican border, where being bilingual is a real asset. It makes you more employable. I mean, isn't that just a reality?
Well, I don't think that should have to be bilingual. I think that when people come to this country, they should learn the language that was in this country.
Well, you know, I don't disagree. I mean, you know, I out of just survival, if nothing else, my grandfather and grandmother on my father's side came here from Norway, and they refused to speak Norwegian in front of my father. So, you know, he doesn't speak Norwegian. He only speaks English.
Degree,
you know?
So she can teach college or anything. It's, we're not talking about grade school.
But the point is that it sounds to me like the undercurrent of what you're saying is that that there's something wrong with the fact that what is this, in education, in the education field in New Mexico, or that in that field they people, you know, that being bilingual is considered an asset? Is that the point?
I understand that. And also, I'm a truck driver, and I've been out here for a long time, and I am starving.
Yeah. Well, this is, you know, welcome to the world of the conservative agenda. I mean, you know, it's we had on, it was 5-6 months ago, the guy who wrote the book about how the trucking industry is just being, you know, what used to be a really good job, you know, independent truck drivers and whatnot are just being just wiped out by the huge squeeze as corporations are increasingly taking control of that. It's got to be a tough one for you, Deborah.
But thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Thank you for calling. I wish you well. And, you know, this is one of the problems with the cons who come along and say, we have easy answers to everything. Here's the easy answer. Let's just have everybody speak English. Or let's just declare it a Christian nation. Or let's just, you know, whatever. I mean, easy answers don't work. We have a complex society. I'm sorry. It sounds liberal, doesn't it? Tom Hartman here with you, 10 minutes before the hour.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. We will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
Hi, this is Tom Hartman. Join me this October as we explore Greece, the ancient birthplace of democracy. When the founding fathers were searching for the best and fairest form of government, they studied the models of Athenian democracy. We'll explore together this part of the ancient world where the ideas that today animate modern democracy were first worked out. This journey is set on the shore of the sparkling Mediterranean Sea with the sacred mountains of Crete behind us. We'll visit the ancient site of Gortian, famous for the Law Code of Gortian, large 6th century BC tablets of stone built into a wall and one of the first examples of laws ever written down, and now the oldest still in existence. I'll teach workshops at the two most important sites in all of Crete, Knossos and Phaistos, plus more. At Knossos, we'll experience the main ceremonial center and the palace of King Minos. For information on how you can join us on this trip of a lifetime, visit www.tomhartman.com or call 1-800-234-TOUR. That's 1-800-234-TOUR, T-O-U-R.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new, and you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
No Sweat Apparel sold $150,000 worth of 100% union-made t-shirts, jeans, and athletic wear last year, and today they're launching a new product hoping to shake up an industry. It's a shoe, actually a line of Converse lookalikes made by unionized workers in Jakarta, Indonesia. On Wednesday, No Sweat Apparel rolled out its new activist-themed line of sneakers. The first special edition sneaker is a code pink high top, in partnership with the D.C.-based feminist anti-war group. Workers earn wages 25% higher than the regional minimum wage. All workers receive a rice allowance based on family size and are given 100% health insurance, travel, maternity, burial, clothing, and retirement benefits. Mark Levinson is the chief economist at the textile workers union Unite.
It shows that companies can produce union-made goods around the world, and this is what our international work has been trying to do, to support unions in the United States and around the world to stop the brutal race to the bottom.
One thing that makes these shoes special is the fact sheet inside the box of the wages and benefits paid to the lowest paid worker. Adam Neiman, co-founder and chief executive of No Sweat Apparel, traveled to Nike headquarters to present Philip Knight with a free pair of sneakers and demand that Nike follow No Sweat's lead.
And they were very nice and they were very nervous. And she said, oh, we can't possibly do this. We have sneakers in warehouses. Sometimes they sit there for 6 months to a year. And they said, Caitlin, all you have to do is put a date on the thing and a disclaimer saying that this information is accurate as of this date. Well, she had no answer for that.
Neiman has a long way to go before there's a world without sweatshops, but he's stitching together a vision one step at a time. With the Workers' Independent News Service, I'm Sarah.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Lather was 30 years old today.
Speaking of George W.
He took away all of his toys. His mother sent newspaper clippings to him about his old friends who stopped being boys.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, 4.5 minutes before the hour. See, the bottom line here for this whole thing is that the at its core, the essence of one dimension of the conservative agenda, and probably the largest dimension, the one that underrides the whole thing, that underpins it all, is this assault on labor that really can be boiled down to two words. Cheap labor. Cheap labor. And if that assault on those of us who work for a living continues to go and continues to grow, as it has since 1980, since Ronald Reagan first came into office, and the conservatives really for the first time since 1929, essentially, when they lost power. Well, 1932 was, you know, when Roosevelt was elected, when Hoover was finally kicked out. If the conservatives get their way, as it were, we're going to see a return to the exact same situation we had in the United States between 1880 and 1930, and that is essentially no middle class. There's a small number of very wealthy people. They called them the robber barons back then. And then there's everybody else who is desperately freaked out, struggling, trying to make a living, willing to work for pennies. And now here we've got John Kerry, yesterday calls for 1 million more college graduates. You know, God bless him. He's the Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry on Tuesday called for an education revolution. That he said would mean 1 million more college graduates in 5 years, and in particular would target minorities and women. And he says, we can't afford not to have this vital tool, a college education, as Americans try to compete in the global marketplace. I agree. I'd go a lot farther, I suspect, than he would. I think that all these state universities should be like the University of California was when I was a kid, free. If you can get in, you can have. I mean, this is Thomas Jefferson's vision. It's how he started the University of Virginia. It's why he started it as a tuition-free school, because he believed that everybody who was capable of learning should have an opportunity to. But it's not just college. It's I mean, it used to be in the from the 40s to the late 80s anywhere until Reagan's reforms started really kicking in. Used to be that with a high school diploma you could earn a good living. How did we do this? We protected our domestic industries with things like tariffs. This is not rocket science, as much as the conservatives would want you to think it is. It's just very straightforward. A middle class is good for democracy, which is why the cons are opposed to it. That's the bottom line. Tom Hartman here with you, defending America from the conservative weapons of mass deception.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The Service Employees International Union unanimously endorsed a resolution calling for an end to the U.S. occupation of Iraq. 4,000 delegates, who represent more than 1.6 million members, voted on the resolution at the Union's National Convention this past weekend. The resolution also asked that soldiers are provided with adequate veterans' benefits and health care. Many delegates said they voted for the resolution to promote the domestic needs of working people who make up the bulk of the armed services.
On Wednesday, No Sweat Apparel rolled out its new activist-themed line of sneakers. The first special edition sneaker is a Code Pink high top in partnership with the D.C.-based feminist anti-war group. Workers earn wages 25% higher than the regional minimum wage. All workers receive a rice allowance based on family size and are given 100% health insurance, travel, maternity, burial, clothing, and retirement benefits. One thing that makes these shoes special is the fact sheet inside the box of the wages and benefits paid to the lowest paid worker. Adam Neiman, co-founder and chief executive of No Sweat Apparel, traveled to Nike headquarters to present Philip Knight with a free pair of sneakers and demand that Nike follow No Sweat's lead.
And they were very nice and they were very nervous, and she said, "Oh, we can't possibly do this. We have sneakers in warehouses. Sometimes they sit there for 6 months to a year." And they said, "Caitlin, all you have to do is put a date on the thing and a disclaimer saying that this information is accurate as of this date." Well, she had no answer for that.
The new sneakers can be purchased at nosweatsneaker.com.
Travelers seeking to cross the United States and Canadian border this weekend should expect added congestion. Canada Customs officers are creating a slowdown at the border to protest federal delays in reviewing pay claims. In 2000, the duties of some officers were expanded to give them the power of arrest. The union says there has been no pay raise to compensate for the added responsibility and risk. The officers are handing out leaflets to motorists explaining their position. Traffic at the border is expected to be heavy as Canada celebrates its Independence Day today. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Even with unemployment growing at a steady rate, it will be some time before working families get to share in the benefits of the new economy. The reason is the drop of real wages from an average of $15.81 per hour in November 2003 to $15.64 in May 2004. The last time wages were at that level was in November of 2001. The main culprit in the lack of wage growth is the residual effect of being in the longest jobless recovery on record. It will take many more months of steady job growth before employers are willing to reverse the trend.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Martha Stewart has a plan. Of course she has a plan. The multi-million-dollar maven of how to live the affluent lifestyle always has a plan. Whether it's a plan for gold-leafing walnut shells to use as individual caviar cups at your next dinner party, or a plan to dump her shares of M-Clone Inc. just before the price crashed, Martha is always ready. As she approaches the prospect of spending a bit of time in the federal pokey for her conviction in that insider stock dumping scheme, she already has a plan to lighten her jail term. She's proposed that she get good time credit, thus shortening her sentence, by helping underprivileged women. How? By cleaning their apartments? Sewing new clothes for their children? No, darling. By teaching poor women how to start their own businesses. One wonders, will her course include an ethics lecture? After her term, Martha might follow the path blazed by Walter Pavlow. A former top executive of MCI, he spent a year and a half in prison after being convicted of wire fraud and money laundering. With an outside partner, it seems that Walter had devised a convoluted accounting scheme so he could loot $6 million from MCI customers. Bad boy. But being bad, at least for white-collar criminals, can put you in demand on the corporate lecture circuit. Ex-con Walter, for example, was recently the featured speaker at UC Berkeley's Center for Responsible Business. Walter pulls down $5,000 a speech and expects to take in up to $200,000 this year, telling audiences just how bad he was. There's even a speakers bureau called Pros and Cons that specializes in marketing such corporate crime confessors as Walter. I'm sure they'd welcome Martha. This is Jim Hightower saying, the lesson here is clear. If you're going to be a criminal, be a white-collar one. The after-prison gigs are a lot better.
As a small business owner, you turn multitasking into a fine art. Because for you, doing several things all at the same time is just another day at the office. So who better than you to appreciate how Sam's Club offers the option of doing two things at once. Buying items you need for your business, while at the same time buying items you need for your home. In addition to finding what you need for your business, you'll find name brand electronics, sporting goods, and fine jewelry, as well as many of the everyday essentials every home needs. When you shop at Sam's Club, you get the same everyday low cost on items for your home as you do on items for your business. And when you're really pressed for time, try using Click and Pull and Fax and Pull, convenient services to help you order ahead for fast pickup. Place your order at samsclub.com or by fax before 5 p.m. And at no extra charge, it's ready to pick up the next morning. You've got a lot going on. Count on us to help you get it done. Sam's Club. We are in business for small business.
For a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back, my friends. Tom Hartman here with you. You know, it's Thursday. It's the second hour of our program. It's a time to go beyond politics. It's the time, you know, traditionally every week that we try and explore an area where, gee, I didn't know I knew that, or, you know, discuss the things that you didn't know that you didn't know that you didn't know that you needed to know, but maybe you really need to know about this stuff. Maybe you didn't know. Well, maybe everything you know is wrong, for example.
You know that you're wrong, but you fear you're right. You suspect you're out of sync. You think that you're out of your mind.
Everything you know is wrong.
Maybe, could be. Is it possible that we're headed for a biological disaster. I'm very pleased in this segment here to have along with us Dr. Howard Markell, the author of When Germs Travel, a book that documents the subtitle of the book, Six Major Epidemics That Have Invaded America Since 1900 and the Fears They Have Unleashed. And he does just a great job of going through these six major epidemics, basically cholera and... I don't have the list here in front of me, but tuberculosis certainly was a piece of it. Trachoma. What am I missing, Doctor?
Well, bubonic plague, which started the 20th century. There was actually a bubonic plague epidemic in 1900 in San Francisco's Chinatown.
Mm-hmm.
We also talk about AIDS.
That's right.
The great pandemic of our generation.
Yeah.
And, of course, you mentioned tuberculosis, which a lot of people think is a thing of the past. But, of course, it's probably the public health enemy number one in the world today.
The last time I was in India was about 4 years ago, and I was in the airport in, I think it was in New Delhi. And, this particular flight, I was in Hyderabad. And we were sitting in the waiting room, and there was this one guy, and I was reading the Indian Business Times or Business News or whatever, you know, the Indian version of Business Week, and there was an article in there that said that over 340 million Indians, residents of India, were infected with tuberculosis, about a third of the entire population. And as I'm reading this, there's this guy about 30 feet away from me who's leaning over a wastebasket, honking his lungs out into this wastebasket, and, you know, coughing and spitting. And there's about a 20-foot, you know, it's like on a petri dish, you know, where you've got a mold growing or bacterium, and you put a fungicide or an antibiotic there, and suddenly, boing! You know, it was like this 20-foot circle. Nobody was willing to get near him. And I'm reading this article, and this guy is, and he got on the same plane I did. I mean, I later had.
Well, and in fact, you're right. I mean, germs travel, and one of the great things about going on this book tour is I carry a copy of my book with me, and I get a lot more leg room on the plane because people see there's a surgical mask, and it says when germs travel, they get very nervous that I might have something as well.
Yeah.
But
this is a real problem.
The book, I talk about a woman from Korea.
Yeah, Suni.
Drug-resistant tuberculosis, and on her transoceanic flight from Seoul to Honolulu to Chicago to Baltimore, 29 other people did become infected.
Yeah, 32-year-old South Korean named Suni, and this was in 1994. Now, we've had other, I know that there have been other outbreaks like that since that time.
Yeah, numbers, by the way, in India mirror the world. There's about 6 billion people on the planet, and 2 billion of them are infected with the latent form of TB, and of those, 10% will go on to get the active contagious form. So it's a very scary disease.
Yeah, in fact, it is the most rapidly growing and most deadly disease on Earth at this moment, is it not? Or is AIDS...
or AIDS, you know, they're competing intensely.
Yeah, Well, in the midst of this, I've got this article here from ABC Online. A bird flu mutating into deadlier threat, you know, and this is the H5N1 virus, which my recollection is that the so-called Spanish flu of 1919, whenever that was, you know, right after
1918 and 1919.
Yeah, 1918 and 1919 was also a variant of the H5 virus, but maybe, you know, I'm not a virologist, so... But
well, that's influenza is a virus, a very serious one. You know, about 500,000 people die every year of influenza.
Yeah.
And 40,000 of them are Americans.
Right.
Most of those people are elderly or have serious heart or lung disease, but we always worry because the flu virus can mutate so rapidly that something like what happened in 1918 could happen again. And particularly as flu virus goes from one species to another, you never really know what that structure is going to be like and how deadly it might be.
Well, and they've been tracking this thing. I mean, this first appeared in Hong Kong in 1997, and this year it's killed 27 people so far in Thailand and Vietnam. And back then, in 97,
the only way people could get it was directly from the birds that had it, which was basically
right.
geese and chickens. And you know, it was the interaction of humans with food animals, with their food animals.
Right.
And now they said just in the last few months they have been inoculating various different species, you know, the geese and whatnot, and mice, which are mammals like we are, with this particular virus. And they, well, here's the quote. Viruses isolated in 1999 and 2000 were less pathogenic to mice, less deadly to mice, than those isolated in 2001 and 2002. And now this most recent strain that they've isolated, they give it to mice and boom, they fall over dead.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, this is like they're warning us this thing's about to break out.
Right. It's very scary. The good news is there's never been a better time in the history of human beings to have an epidemic than 2004.
What? We have better Why? Medicine. How could you say that?
Well, it's kind of a funny, offbeat way to say it, but we have better medicines, we have better medical care, we have better communication. For example, SARS last year,
yeah.
8 days after the cases in Hong Kong, not the Chinese cases that were suppressed, that occurred in November of 2002, but in February of 2003 in one hotel called the Metropole, there was an outbreak of SARS. 8 days later, scientists and doctors confirmed that it was caused by coronavirus. Now, that's a world record in the history of infectious diseases, eight
yeah.
days.
Yeah.
And it's a lot due to the fact that we have the internet and rapid communications and so on, that doctors from around the world could work on this problem and solve it. And then we took the appropriate steps to contain that disease. The problem is that with epidemics is that we forget about them once they've gone away.
Mm-hmm.
Develop this profound amnesia. Well, SARS, that's last year. TB, that's ancient history.
Yeah.
And the answer is no, it's not, because we never really conquer germs. We wrestle them to a draw, and we have to think about them all the time.
Yeah, now there's I think two important points here that I'd like to get to before we wrap this thing up, and that is on page 171 in your book, you talk about the CNN Time poll that was taken in early February 93 that asked, should foreigners who are carrying AIDS be allowed to come into the United States?
Mm-hmm.
71% said no, 22% said yes. And those who said no, most of them cited as the reason why, not so much a fear of AIDS as a concern about the expense of caring for people who were inevitably going to become sick. And then the next page you talk about Judge Johnson and this whole thing about, you know, these HIV positive Haitians who were put in Guantanamo, you know, it's
right.
Simply basically for the disease, for the crime of being sick. In your book you suggest, or at least in my take of your book, you suggest that there actually is something, or there are a variety of somethings that we can do about the fact that epidemics are cyclical, they're not always predictable, they're not going to go away, that modern medicine in some ways has actually may even be causing some of
right.
these things, like
right.
the multi-drug resistant tuberculosis, rather than helping them. And you lay out some specific suggestions. I'd like you to talk about what those are. What can we do?
Sure. Well, the first thing you have to realize is that
you're coughing.
I'm coughing, but I have asthma.
Okay,
not
all
contagious.
Right.
You have to realize that when you have any public health plan, if you penalize somebody, whether it's Haitians or immigrants or whatever, they tend not to see doctors. And if they don't see doctors and they have a contagious disease, then that disease could spread.
Right.
So you always have to ask yourself: is your public health administration helping the matters or worsening the matters?
Right.
But there's a lot we can do. First, we have to accept germs travel. They're very egalitarian. They don't care who they attack, and they can go from one part of the world to another in less than 24 hours, very quickly. So that the health of what's going on in Guangdong or right now in Sudan, where there are epidemics of polio breaking out and cholera,
yeah.
are intimately tied to those of us living in New York or Ann Arbor or Chicago. So what we have to really do is develop a global plan of public health. germs don't stop at borders. They don't respect state lines or national lines. They travel. And so that means, I think, the richer countries of the world, and we're certainly one of them, really have to do our part to make sure that we have good public health in parts of the world where they don't have doctors, where they don't have nurses, and so on. And the expense isn't all that great. The United Nations has figured out that if all of us living in a wealthy country, you know, Western country, would sacrifice the price of a movie ticket and a box of popcorn. That's about 10 to 15 bucks a year. That would raise about $50 billion a year. And if it were given to the World Health Organization in a systematized, you know, a very good plan of action, it would reduce the new cases of AIDS, malaria, and TB each year by half. It would reduce infant maternal mortality by 66% and probably get food and water, clean water, to half the world who doesn't have it right now.
Yeah.
Even if that's off by half,
now Dr.
it's
Markel,
still a good plan.
Yeah, I don't disagree. We're talking with Dr. Howard Markel, who's the author of When Germs Travel, Six Major Epidemics That Have Invaded America Since 1900 and the Fears They've Unleashed. But, Dr. Markel, I can just hear the Bush administration right now, the conservatives out there going, what? You're talking about socialism? We're going to raise our taxes? What?
Right.
No. Well, we'll give that money to ExxonMobil, the energy plan that Dick Cheney came up with, $18 billion in gifts to the energy industry. But, good heavens, public health!
Right. I mean, have to work, all of us, not just doctors and public health people, but regular people, listeners, to say, no, this is important.
Yeah.
You know, we spent about $300 billion so far in Iraq, and without getting political, I'm not so sure that was a great investment.
No, it doesn't seem so.
But I do know this investment of $50 billion a year, and it's not just the United States. It would be France, Germany, England, and so on and so forth. That investment would save us at least $360 billion a year of lost income, health care, and so on.
Yeah, well, but see, you're going to run into the same problem that, Head Start, you have a small investment for Head Start, you got a much fewer truants when you, all of these programs, the conservatives who have taken control of this country would frankly much rather have prisons and for-profit hospitals
and
deal with deal with the back end.
Right. You know, we have to be smart, not just tough. And, with all due respect to Saddam Hussein, this is the biggest threat to Americans today is a emerging epidemic or a re-emerging epidemic.
Yeah.
And so not to make us panicky, we can do something about it, but we have to take that step.
Dr. Howard Markel, thank you very much for being with us, the author of When Germs Travel, Six Major Epidemics That Have Invaded America Since 1900 and the Fears They've Unleashed. Thank you.
Thank you.
This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 20 minutes past the hour.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Do you want to own a computer? Is your credit less than perfect? If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, then you are already approved for a brand new IBM, Dell, eMachine, or other name brand computer guaranteed. You heard right. Bad credit? No credit? No problem. There is no credit check, so you will not be turned down. If you have a checking account and can afford a weekly payment of $29.95 for just 12 months, you are approved for your brand new name brand computer. Just call 800-588-0596. Freedom Frog Funding says you are approved. So give us a call today at 800-588-0596 to have your brand new computer shipped right to you. And if you act now, we'll add a $200 upgrade and a one-year warranty for free. You heard right. we will upgrade your computer and throw in a warranty absolutely free. So don't wait. Let Freedom Frog Funding send you the computer of your dreams today. Call 800-588-0596. That number is 800-588-0596.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about the Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Do the Republicans or the Democrats have a clear vision for America that actually includes democracy, fairness, and justice? Do the Greens or the Progressives? How can we create a shared vision of the kind of future we want for our children? This is Tom Hartman, and I'll be exploring these and many other issues with guests from a wide variety of viewpoints, as well as taking your calls.
The Tom Hartman Show, 12 p.m. till 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time.
While the world seems to be collapsing around us, there is hope. Tom Hartman's inspiring book, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late, has just been re-released. The new updated version is available now and offers solutions to the issues that concern us most: eco-damage, genetic engineering, virulent disease, the end of cheap oil, water shortages, global famine, wars. We can still do something about it and create a world that will work for us and our children's children. As the inspiration for Leonardo DiCaprio's web movie, Global Warning, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight details what is happening to our planet, the reason for our culture's blind behavior, and how we can fix the problem. There is information. There is hope. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late. Now with new updated information, available in bookstores everywhere.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Tulsa, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Matamor, Apollo, Bangor, Baltimore, Salvador, Amarillo, Topeka, Blair, Killam, Padilla, I'm a killer, I've been everywhere, man.
As welcome back, Tom Hartman here with you. Having a few places. Time for our George Bush flip-flop alert of the day. Here's a good one. George Bush says he opposes the creation of a Department of Homeland Security. Quote, so creating a cabinet office doesn't solve any problem. You still have agencies within the federal government that will have to be coordinated. So the answer is that creating a cabinet post doesn't solve anything. That on March 19th, 02, a mere 3 months later, George W. says, so tonight, I ask the Congress to join me in creating a single permanent department with an overriding and urgent message, securing the homeland of America and protecting the American people. The George Bush flip-flop of the day opposes the Department of Homeland Security and then supports it less than 3 months later. The GOP broken promise of the day, the grand old party, the Republican Party, one of the platform planks of the 2000 GOP platform, one of the planks, was that Republicans would defend the First Amendment. The First Amendment, you know, most people don't know the exact language of the First Amendment. It has a rather actually startling little piece to it. Here's the First Amendment in its entirety, and I will emphasize the part that I think is, you know, really relevant here. Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances. Congress shall make no law. In other words, you cannot stop people from protesting. Well, the GOP platform
in 2000 says, quote, "The First Amendment enshrines in our Constitution and guarantees indispensable democratic freedoms of speech, press, and association, and the right to petition our government. The Republican Party affirms that any regulation of the political process must not infringe upon the rights of the people to full participation in the political process."
Update.
September 5th, 2003, Fox News, quote, "Anti-Bush protesters exiled as distant zones. Supporters can stand near President Bush and loyally wave their signs, but demonstrators opposing the president's policies are exiled to protest zones in isolated areas," according to the ACLU. This is a quote from Fox News. "A favorite tactic of the Bush administration has been to herd protesters at presidential appearances into, quote, designated protest zones, end quote, out of the sight of the president's motorcade and to arrest people who refuse to be moved." Update, January 2004, "The Bush administration's assault on a free press," is the headline. This is from globaljournalist.org. "A president who purports to believe in democracy has acted anti-democratically again," David Dadge says, "as he leads or condones assaults on the First Amendment freedom." As noted on March 15, 2004, in The Nation, an article entitled "An Indecent Proposal, Only One Republican in the House Defends the First Amendment." "We are moving in the direction of undermining the First Amendment," says U.S. Representative Republican Ron Paul. Marvin Johnson, an American Civil Liberties Union legislative counsel, said the very notion of this legislation, this being the Broadcast Decency Enforcement Act of 2004, runs counter to everything prescribed in the First Amendment. This would have essentially created a government agency to make sure that nobody says anything indecent anywhere on any media. And, of course, this is, you know, a favorite wedge issue of the Reich Wing. And only one Republican stood up and said, "Hey, wait a minute. What happened to the First Amendment? What happened to free speech in the United States?" 29 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you, helping you win the water cooler wars with uncommon sense from the radical middle. For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The Service Employees International Union unanimously endorsed a resolution calling for an end to the U.S. occupation of Iraq. 4,000 delegates, who represent more than 1.6 million members, voted on the resolution at the Union's National Convention this past weekend. The resolution also asked that soldiers are provided with adequate veterans' benefits and health care. Many delegates said they voted for the resolution to promote the domestic needs of working people who make up the bulk of the armed services.
On Wednesday, No Sweat Apparel rolled out its new activist-themed line of sneakers. The first special edition sneaker is a Code Pink high top in partnership with the D.C.-based feminist anti-war group. Workers earn wages 25% higher than the regional minimum wage. All workers receive a rice allowance based on family size and are given 100% health insurance, travel, maternity, burial, clothing, and retirement benefits. One thing that makes these shoes special is the fact sheet inside the box of the wages and benefits paid to the lowest paid worker. Adam Neiman, co-founder and chief executive of No Sweat Apparel, traveled to Nike headquarters to present Philip Knight with a free pair of sneakers and demand that Nike follow No Sweat's lead.
And they were very nice and they were very nervous. And she said, "Oh, we can't possibly do this. We have sneakers in warehouses. Sometimes they sit there for 6 months to a year." And I said, Caitlin, all you have to do is put a date on the thing and a disclaimer saying that this information is accurate as of this date. Well, she had no answer for that.
The new sneakers can be purchased at nosweatsneaker.com.
Travelers seeking to cross the United States and Canadian border this weekend should expect added congestion. Canada Customs officers are creating a slowdown at the border to protest federal delays in reviewing pay claims. In 2000, the duties of some officers were expanded to give them the power of arrest. The union says there has been no pay raise to compensate for the added responsibility and risk. The officers are handing out leaflets to motorists explaining their position. Traffic at the border is expected to be heavy as Canada celebrates its Independence Day today. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Even with unemployment growing at a steady rate, it will be some time before working families get to share in the benefits of the new economy. The reason is the drop of real wages from an average of $15.81 per hour in November 2003 to $15.64 in May 2004. The last time wages were at that level was in November of 2001. The main culprit in the lack of wage growth is the residual effect of being in the longest jobless recovery on record. It will take many more months of steady job growth before employers are willing to reverse the trend.
You've been listening to WIND, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 26 and a half minutes before the hour. Let's go back to the, just very quickly. There is a lot in the news that I wanted to talk about and share with you. And of course, if you have issues that you'd like to bring into the mix, our number 1-866, that's a newfangled toll-free number, 1-866-889-8894. But back to the resume of George W. Bush. We started reading this yesterday. I figured it might have been in the third hour of the program. Anyhow, we started his accomplishments as president. I thought this was sweet. I'll just read part of it here. I'm the first president in U.S. history to enter office with a criminal record. I invaded and occupied two countries at a continuing cost of over $1 billion per week. I spent the U.S. surplus and effectively bankrupted the U.S. Treasury. I shattered the record for the largest annual deficit in U.S. history. I set an economic record for the most private bankruptcies filed in any 12-month period. I set an all-time record for the most foreclosures in any 12-month period. I set an all-time record for the biggest drop in the history of the U.S. stock market. Wow, that's amazing. In my first year in office, over 2 million Americans lost their jobs, and that trend continues. Well, actually, it's been recently reversed. Isn't that nice? I'm proud that this must have been written a while ago. I'm proud that the members of my cabinet are the richest of any administration in U.S. history. My poorest millionaire, Condoleezza Rice, has a Chevron oil tanker named after her. I set a record for the most campaign fundraising trips by a U.S. president. I am the all-time U.S. and world record holder for receiving the most corporate campaign contributions. My largest lifetime campaign contributor and one of my best friends, Kenneth Lay, presided over the largest corporate bankruptcy fraud in U.S. history, Enron. My political party used Enron private jets and corporate attorneys to assure my success with the U.S. Supreme Court during my election decision. I have protected my friends at Halliburton and Enron against investigation or prosecution. More time and money was spent investigating the Monica Lewinsky affair than has ever been spent investigating one of the biggest corporate ripoffs in history. And it goes, well, I'll read you some more tomorrow. We'll continue with this. Got an email from a listener in Canada. I love it when Canadians correct me on Canadian politics because frankly, I'm an American. I grew up here. I live just 2 hours from Canada. I mean, we're here in the mountains of central Vermont, in the People's Republic of Vermont. It's about a 2-hour drive from our house to Montreal, and we do get up there. At least before I was doing this radio show every day, we used to get up there, a couple times a year for the weekend or whatever.
And yeah, hopefully we will again soon. But, you know, as an American in the United States, we hear in the mainstream media almost nothing about Canadian politics. And so I confess to being one of those ignorant Americans in some areas, and Canadian politics is one of them. Anyhow, this is from Chris, who says, great show, missed some of the conversation, so I may be wrong, but I think you made a small mistake on Canadian politics. You were saying that the Liberals and the Green Party were splitting the Liberal vote and were going to form a coalition. You were saying that the more Green votes there were, the more Liberal the Liberals would get. Well, this is true. The Green Party in Canada has virtually no influence. I think that when you were talking about the Green Party, you probably meant the New Democratic Party. And yes, I did. I knew that there was another party that they were, you know, splitting up votes with, and I had made the assumption it was the Greens. I could be wrong here, says Chris, but even though the Greens did quite well in the election on June 28th, they really don't have any pull. The NDP, the New Democratic Party, is the party I'm counting on to balance the Liberals, who, by the way, aren't very liberal, read sponsorship scandal. In other words, the Liberal Party in Canada apparently is going the way of the Democratic Leadership Council. It's like, you know, when Al Franken describes himself as, I'm a DLC Democrat, or Bill Clinton brags about the fact that he helped create the DLC, the Democratic Leadership Council. Democratic Leadership Council is all about bringing corporate money into the Democratic Party. And I suppose you could argue that it was a good thing in 1992 because, you know, Howard Dean hadn't shown them how to use the Internet to raise money, you know, the cons have been so successful since Reagan in wiping out unionized employment that the unions are, you know, not the ready source of available funds, shall we say, for campaigns that they were in the 40s, 50s, 60s, and 70s. Nor are unionized employees, for that matter, willing or able to participate in politics. And so you got the DLC that is struggling, fighting for the soul of the Democratic Party, trying to make it more like the Republicans, with people like me and all of us liberals out there who say, thank you very much, but to the DLC and to the corporations, thank you very much, but I really think that when, you know, it's fine to make money, good thing, in fact, I'm totally in favor of people doing business. I mean, it's one of the things that has made this country what it is, for better or for worse. But, I mean, for better. I mean, we can pick a lot of really very, very positive things. But, or perhaps I should say and when corporations start to insert their values, and keeping in mind that by law a corporation has to have as its primary value to earn a profit, to make money for its stockholders, when corporations start inserting their values, and that being their prime value, into the politics of we the people, then we've got a problem. And, of course, that's what's happening the Republican Party is nearly entirely captive to this. The Democratic Party, I would hesitate to put a percentage on it, but I'd say it's probably close to half. There's certainly during the Clinton administration, aggressively moved in that direction. And there are many of us who hope that the Wellstone contingent, the Howard Dean contingent, if you hear the Republicans talk about it, the John Kerry contingent, I mean, you know, they're saying, hey, this guy is the most consistent liberal in the entire United States Senate. He's consistently votes as liberal. In fact, he's so consistent about his voting liberal that he's more liberal than Teddy Kennedy, say the Republicans. Of course, in the next breath, they say, but he flip-flops. He takes position. Can't have it both ways, guys. Sorry. Either he's a liberal or he's some middle-of-the-road guy who's willing to take positions on both sides of an issue. Which is it? My read of his voting record is that he's a liberal, by the way, just for the record. Anyhow, apparently the Liberal Party in Canada, Chris doesn't come out and say this, but reading into this, has probably bitten into that same apple, or tried to grab, to use the Lord of the Rings metaphor, you know, trying to grab the precious ring of corporate
sponsorship. Just like the Republicans have already gone to the other side, to the dark side of the force. And so many Democrats are filling the poll. So anyhow, Chris wraps it up by saying the NDP is about as socialist as Canada will tolerate. However, if you look at the other choices, they are probably the best of the bunch. Thank you, Chris. I appreciate the information. Good to know. I mean, this falls into the category of good to know stuff. By the way, in something that I just, you know, I keep wanting to talk about and don't get around to, did you know that one of the edicts that Paul Bremer issued, and I don't know if it's written into the Iraqi constitution, but it is the law in Iraq right now. The law is that it is illegal to form a union in Iraq. It's against the law. You may not form a union. In fact, this is an article by Ralph Nader. I mean, see, this is what Ralph Nader's good at. And, you know, educating people. He should be doing more of this and less of this nonsense of running for president. Anyhow, he wrote this op-ed piece that was published on June 28th on commondreams.org. And he says, Paul Bremer continues to enforce Saddam Hussein's decree banning unions using military force where necessary. Bush's coalition authority would also interpret illegal unions, demonstrations, and strikes. And in fact, if you engage in a strike in Iraq as a laborer, that, Nader says, can result in the workers being arrested and treated as a prisoner of war. He goes on to add, Bremer has lowered Saddam Hussein's minimum wage and has cut off the dictator's welfare benefits for housing and food. And we wonder why people are joining the insurgency. Now, even though it's against the law to form a true union in Iraq, there actually is a group called the Union of the Unemployed that right now in Iraq has 300,000 members. That is an actual group. And they are petitioning. They were petitioning Bremer. Now they'll have to be petitioning Alawi. You know, they're saying, hey, you know that stuff that you're paying those Americans $150,000 a year to come over here and do, like building schools and rebuilding hospitals and rebuilding oil facilities. And why don't you hire us? It's our country, after all, and we're willing to work for a lot less money. And, you know, if we had the money, then we could recycle it in the economy, and then the shopkeepers would make more money, and the guys who run the restaurants would make more money, and it's just things would work out better for our nation if you paid us and let us do the work of repairing the damage from your bombs and your sanctions and Saddam's mismanagement or brutal dictatorship, I mean, whatever you want to call it. Why not just pay us instead of paying Halliburton $250,000 a person and then having them hire people for $100,000 a year? In fact, here's the actual quote from the Union of the Unemployed spokesman. He says, we went in without membership records in our hands. He's talking about, you know, his visit to Paul Bremer. We went in without membership records in our hands, and they said, who are you? Who do you represent? You are nobody. We are the power here. Well, at least that is the impression by the UII of the reception they received. I guess now we're back to Ralph Nader's words. Of the reception they received. So they demonstrated in front of the coalition's palace, followed by a sit-in. Uh-oh. This is like union stuff. Can't have sit-ins. Can't have demonstrations. It's not conservative. So 50 of them were arrested and tossed into Abu Ghraib prison. I mean, I think these people would just like to know that the water is going to work, that their food is safe. That they have a job, that their kids can go to school. I don't want to fail to talk about Sudan. I actually plan to talk more about it in this hour. It's in the news, and you don't need me to tell you that there is a disaster going on in Sudan right now. The northern half of the country is dominated by light-skinned Arab Muslims, or light-skinned Muslim Arabic-speaking Arabs. And the southern half of the country is dominated by dark-skinned African, Central and Southern African ancestry people constituting three or four different tribes who don't speak Arabic and who by and large are either Christian or follow ancient religions. You know, they're animists by most part. And what we know, what you'll hear in the news, is that these Arabs from the north, who control the country. Khartoum is up in the north, the capital city. They've put together this kind of mercenary army of about 20,000 to 30,000 people called, as I recall, the Jalawid. Something like that, very close to that anyway. Who are going in and, you know, destroying villages and robbing and using rape as one of their main weapons and murdering like crazy. And you've got hundreds of thousands of displaced persons, hundreds of thousands of people have been killed. It may be that within the next few months, as many as 1 million people will have been either displaced or killed and will die within the next year as a consequence of this because of disease and famine. Now, what you don't hear in the mainstream media is why this is going on. It's presented by and large as a straight ethnic cleansing story. Oh, it's the Arabs in the north trying to kill off the Africans in the south. And there is some truth to that. In fact, when the British ruled that area, they actually had, in the 20s, they tried to divide this into two countries. Probably should have. But here's the real issue. The real issue is that they found oil. And there are a number of oil companies operating there, and the oil is in the south, most of the oil. And what you're really looking at here are oil wars. This is really a battle over who's going to control the wealth of the nation. And the oil companies are... You know, American oil companies, right now there's an embargo, so they're not participating so much. China's oil company, Malaysia's oil company, French oil companies. They're right in there feeding the pot. It's a tragedy.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels and charging more. It's just wrong.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channel?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a 4-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. At $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call now.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you?
Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul Out of His Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Tom Hartman will be joining the exceptional faculty of The Great Rethinking, The Prophets Oxford, taking place the weekend of September 10th through 12th at Oxford University, England. You are invited to join Tom Hartman in Oxford, along with other leading visionaries, including Vandana Shiva, Helen Caldicott, and Rupert Sheldrake, among others, to rethink and reshape our collective future. The Great Rethinking Oxford premise is that this tumultuous time in our human history may be crafted into the birthing of something truly new. And you can play your part in shaping this new worldview by joining Tom Hartman September 10th through 12th. To find out how, go to the website greatmystery.org. That's greatmystery.org. Together, we will make a difference.
With the Workers Independent News Service, I'm Sarah Turner, bringing you today's feature story. Walmart faces the largest class action lawsuit in U.S. history. A 3-year-old sex discrimination suit against Walmart has been certified as class action. This means the nation's largest retailer is now the defendant in the nation's largest private civil rights case. More from Kalia Ramirez in Berkeley, California.
The suit says the giant retailer is discriminating against women in pay and promotions and creating a demeaning atmosphere for women workers. The class certification makes the 6 named plaintiffs in Duke's versus Walmart stores representatives of the interests of a class of about 1.6 million women who have worked at Walmart or Sam's Club in the United States at any time since December 26, 1998. Brad Seligman of the Berkeley-based Impact Fund is the plaintiff's lead attorney. He says class action status means Walmart cannot afford to ignore this lawsuit.
The jury's judgment is going to affect the rights of 1.6 or more million women, which means Walmart is not going to be dealing with little pinpricks from a judgment here, from an individual, or a judgment there. They're facing the challenge to their whole company.
When the decision was announced, Walmart spokeswoman Mona Williams told Associated Press that the retailer had recently announced a new job classification and pay structure for its hourly workers. Seligman says he doesn't know the details of the change, but that the sex discrimination suit is spurring Walmart to action, on a public relations level at least.
Their commercials have totally changed, haven't they? They're now the Rainbow Coalition works at Walmart. Walmart clearly felt it had to make some changes to blunt what it anticipated was going to be the storm of negative publicity, which we've seen happen.
Walmart wants to appeal the class certification. Meanwhile, Seligman says the plaintiffs would like a jury trial next year. For the Workers Independent News Service, I'm
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
So just because he wasn't really elected, just because that ballot count wasn't fair, just because him and all his friends are millionaires,
he's a compassionate conservative. Welcome back. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 4 minutes before the hour. See, it was in the 1970s that oil was first discovered in South Central Sudan, but it was only, they only started piping it out, pumping the stuff out and exporting it
about 5 years ago. It's a very recent thing. And as Carl Vick wrote in the International Herald Tribune a couple of years ago, June 13, 2001, he said, today, four oil companies are producing more than 200,000 barrels a day, and more firms are exploring other reserves. Export revenue has doubled the government's military budget over the past 2 years. John Ryle, an independent investigator, says the fighting follows the oil. And so, you know, isn't it strange? You know, Colin Powell is over there. Not one word about the Bush administration's oil buddies being mentioned in the context of the problems in Sudan. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Billy in Santa Cruz is on the line. Hey, Billy, what's up?
Hey, Tom. Tom?
You are live and on the air, Billy.
All right. You know, I don't hear the click, so it's hard for me to believe that suddenly I'm on.
Well, actually, I had put you on about 15 seconds ago.
Oh, good thing I didn't breathe hard.
I guess.
Before we talk politics for just a second, I've always believed that my ADD was a form of OCD. Could that be true?
Well, it appears that both ADD and OCD have to do with dopamine, and that there you go, and there may be a connection between the two. But yeah, there are some people with ADD who have OCD. Well, why do you ask?
Well, just because I have that theory, because I have ADD, and I also have just a little bit of OCD.
Yeah, it's not uncommon.
Like a nail biter kind of thing?
Yeah, it's not uncommon. In fact, one of the more common things that happens, real OCD is more like evening up. Like if you're walking along, if you step on a crack with your right foot, you got to do it with the left. Yeah.
But like things like scab picking, things like that, I always think of those as OCD.
Yeah. Yeah, it can be. It can be. It absolutely can be.
But that's not why we called today.
Yeah, okay. Well, okay. Well,
the music.
Yeah. So I'll give you 15 seconds to why you called today, and then
all I'm going to say is this: I just heard the commercial about the Oxford thing.
Uh huh.
And boy, you know, that's the one thing. Because I like to come on here with some hard negative stuff, but things are so bad that yes, things are so bad. Maybe this could be a tipping point, a turning point. I really am behind you with that.
Yeah, I hope so. I hope so. Billy, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. Yeah, I spoke at Oxford last year, and I had to apologize for George W. before I could continue. It was incredible. Tom Hartman here with you.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program.
Hold
and more
him.
Information.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hart.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The Service Employees International Union unanimously endorsed a resolution calling for an end to the U.S. occupation of Iraq. 4,000 delegates, who represent more than 1.6 million members, voted on the resolution at the Union's National Convention this past weekend. The resolution also asked that soldiers are provided with adequate veterans' benefits and health care. Many delegates said they voted for the resolution to promote the domestic needs of working people who make up the bulk of the armed services.
On Wednesday, No Sweat Apparel rolled out its new activist-themed line of sneakers. The first special edition sneaker is a Code Pink high top in partnership with the D.C.-based feminist anti-war group. Workers earn wages 25% higher than the regional minimum wage. All workers receive a rice allowance based on family size and are given 100% health insurance, travel, maternity, burial, clothing, and retirement benefits. One thing that makes these shoes special is the fact sheet inside the box of the wages and benefits paid to the lowest paid worker. Adam Neiman, co-founder and chief executive of No Sweat Apparel, traveled to Nike headquarters to present Philip Knight with a free pair of sneakers and demand that Nike follow No Sweat's lead.
And they were very nice and they were very nervous. And she said, oh, we can't possibly do this. We have sneakers in warehouses. Sometimes they sit there for 6 months to a year. And they said, Caitlin, all you have to do is put a date on the thing and a disclaimer saying that this information is accurate as of this date. Well, she had no answer for that.
The new sneakers can be purchased at nosweatsneaker.com.
Travelers seeking to cross the United States and Canadian border this weekend should expect added congestion. Canada Customs officers are creating a slowdown at the border to protest federal delays in reviewing pay claims. In 2000, the duties of some officers were expanded to give them the power of arrest. The union says there has been no pay raise to compensate for the added responsibility and risk. The officers are handing out leaflets to motorists explaining their position. Traffic at the border is expected to be heavy as Canada celebrates its Independence Day today. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Even with unemployment growing at a steady rate, it will be some time before working families get to share in the benefits of the new economy. The reason is the drop of real wages from an average of $15.81 per hour in November 2003 to $15.64 in May 2004. The last time wages were at that level was in November of 2001. The main culprit in the lack of wage growth is the residual effect of being in the longest jobless recovery on record. It will take many more months of steady job growth before employers are willing to reverse the trend.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Think you're not involved in your community? Think again. Spending your money with local businesses is more than an economic choice. It's a way you can have a say in the look and feel of your hometown. By creating a demand for local goods and services, we can ensure a place for the independent businesses that help give our communities character and keep them unique. The American Independent Business Alliance encourages you to get involved. Support your homegrown businesses. Find Amoeba online at amiba.net.
Woo! I'm suffering from Reagan exhaustion. Greek gods did not get the glorification that Ronald Reagan has been getting since his death. He's already gotten a king-like seven-day funeral and a tsunami of worshipful media coverage. And now, the full deification of the Gipper is proceeding apace, with Republican politicos openly engaged in idolatry. Believe it or not, they're pushing to have Ronnie's face carved into Mount Rushmore, to off Alexander Hamilton from the $10 bill and replace him with Reagan's likeness, to name still more big government facilities in Washington after Reagan, to make his birthday a national holiday, and to name at least one thing after Reagan in every one of America's 3,067 counties. A little perspective, please. It would be appropriate, for example, to erect a statue on the Mall and inscribe it, Ronald Reagan, the man who gave us Saddam Hussein. Yes, for 5 years, Reagan provided aid and all sorts of weaponry to build up Saddam and his military might, arming the Iraqi thug for his war against Iran. And yes, that's the same Iran that Ronnie's White House basement troll, Ollie North, sold arms to in order to finance Reagan's secret, illegal war against Nicaragua's elected government. A criminal misadventure that led to 11 top Reagan officials being convicted. Just for old time's sake, here are a few more golden chestnuts from Ronnie's tenure. James Watt, ketchup as a vegetable, Star Wars, a tax credit for segregated Bob Jones University, the SNL scandal, trees cause pollution, Grenada, William Casey, union busting, trickle-down economics, CIA sponsorship of Muslim radicals in Afghanistan, including one Osama bin Laden, Ed Meese, extensive cuts in programs serving poor people, Robert Bork, and the tripling of the national debt. This is Jim Hightower saying, let's give Reagan his due. All of it.
Ever wonder who coined the phrase, we eliminate the middleman? Well, one thing's pretty certain. It wasn't the middleman. And how did they eliminate him? Something fishy there. But I digress. GEICO pioneered direct-to-consumer car insurance over 65 years ago. And they've been saving smart drivers money ever since. Give them a call. And you might ask them, what did they do with the middleman?
GEICO's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? GEICO, 1-800-947-AUTO. 15 minutes could save you 15%.
You think I'd maybe had some Bush's phases? Maybe, please. I'm a Carrier air conditioner. Isolation lets me focus and keeping you comfy.
For unmatched expertise, Carrier stands alone.
I'm an expert. You're on the job. Don't even think about it, Doug.
Our air conditioners with Puron refrigerant are energy efficient and environmentally sound with a 10-year limited warranty. See dealer for details.
Nothing can stop my dedication. Heat waves, rain, your kid's soccer ball. Ouch. I'm fine, really.
No wonder Carrier's trusted in more homes than any other.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here, live with you, broadcasting coast to coast on terrestrial radio stations, beaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite. Beaming around the planet on radiopower.org. And yes, this mic is open. As I was wrapping up the last hour, Billy in Santa Cruz had called, and the music started, and Billy hadn't made his point, and Louise typed into the instant messenger here, hold him. And but I was already, you know, said, Billy, you know, go ahead and make your point. But anyhow, I forgot to close my mic and didn't know what that meant, and so I yelled out, hold him, you know, as the show was closing. And Trisha in our chat room has found it very interesting, shall we say. And so there's been a lot of speculation in the chat room about who's the hymn that I was going to hold. And I just so you know. And if you've never been in our chat room, let me invite you. On behalf of Trisha, just go to TomHartman.com. However you spell it, you'll get there. And click on Live Chat. It'll take you to the Democratic Forum on CompuServe. Click the chat button and pick the Tom Hartman Radio Show room, which I think is room number 7. But it's all pretty simple. And there you will be. There's some worrying news today. Things that I think should cause us to furrow our brows and be a little concerned. This from the Associated Press. It's actually a story Friday, June 25th. This is Thursday, July 1st. That doesn't make any sense. But in any case, it's apparently today's story. The government needs to establish guidelines. An article by Eric Werner, the Associated Press. The government needs to establish guidelines for canceling or rescheduling elections if terrorists strike the United States again, says the chairman of a new federal voting commission. Say what? Well, DeForest B. Soares, who is the head of the new Federal Voting Commission, he was appointed to this job just last year by George W. Bush, says that events in Spain, where a terrorist attack took shortly before the March election possibly influenced its outcome, show the need for a process to deal with terrorists threatening or interrupting the November 2nd presidential election in the United States. Soares, a Republican, former Secretary of State of New Jersey, says, we need to right now put in place a policy so that George W. Bush can declare the November 2nd election 124 days from now null and void or suspended because of terrorism. He points out that 9/11 was actually an election day in New York City. What he doesn't point out is that a lot of people still went to the polls. Anyway, That raises a lot of eyebrows. At least it raises my eyebrows. You know, this guy is not just. This isn't just, you know, something there. You know, Dick Bush and Colin are sitting around talking about in the back room. What do you mean? I just violated the FCC rules. No, I didn't. This is an actual member of the administration out there saying, you know, the head of the Election Commission. In other news, today's Wall Street Journal. This tells us explicitly in a very well-researched article by William Bulkley, titled Mental Ills Rise Among Soldiers Back from Iraq, tells us what happens when chicken hawks send young men and women off to war, to real war. You know, the only person Wolfie never served, Dick Cheney said during Vietnam, he had other priorities. When his student deferment ran out, 9 months to the week later, his wife gave birth. That was when you could get a deferment if you were a parent. George W., of course, joined the Texas Air National Guard, leapfrogging over 300 people in front of him because his daddy was, I don't know what his daddy was then. He was either a congressman or he was the head of the CIA. No, he was a congressman at the time. And then, of course, W goes AWOL and all that. But anyhow, he ended up never seeing combat. So you got a president who has no idea what combat really is like. Maybe he's seen a movie. In fact, probably Cheney and Wolfowitz and Pearl and Bush, probably their idea of what a war is like is something that they developed watching MASH reruns. I mean, keep in mind, I mean, the only person who was a member of this administration who was seriously opposed, we discover, to attacking Iraq at any point during the process was Colin Powell. And he was a guy who had been in battle. He knew what it was going to mean. And he was the voice of caution and deliberation. He virtually single-handedly forced George W. Bush to go to the United Nations. Most people believe, I mean, Powell has never come out and said it, but believe that he did that in the hopes that he could avert a war. That, you know, they'd get the inspectors would go in, they would either find stuff and destroy it, as they had done in the 90s, or they would find that there wasn't anything and there was no need to invade, and in either case, there's no need for a war. Colin Powell didn't realize that this was a scheme that had been proposed in a letter signed by the Project for a New American Century members Jeb Bush, Paul Wolfowitz, Richard Pearl, Dick Cheney, Donald Rumsfeld, back in a letter to President Bill Clinton, that we should attack Iraq to establish a beachhead, as it were, in the oil-rich region of the Middle East in 1998. So anyhow, you got a bunch of chicken hawks sending real soldiers off to die. And perhaps even more significantly, or I don't know if you can be more significant than the more than 850 of our young men and women dying, not to mention the thousands who have been physically wounded, not to mention the tens of thousands of absolutely innocent Iraqi civilians who have died, not to mention the Iraqi soldiers who died. I'm sure some of them were terrible people, but I am willing to bet you that 90% of them were conscripts. They didn't want to be in the Iraqi army any more than than in my generation, people who went to Vietnam wanted to be. You know, my take of it was that it was maybe 20%. Anyhow, here's the story. The Mental Ills Rise Among Soldiers Back from Iraq by William Bulkley in today's Wall Street Journal. About 17%. That's almost one in five. It's more like maybe one in six, right? That would be about 17% of U.S. soldiers surveyed by the Army who saw heavy combat in Iraq and have returned home suffer from at least one major mental health problem. This according to a study that was published today in the New England Journal of Medicine. These are the wounds that you can't see. Yes, we've got these people who don't have a leg anymore. They're missing their hands. We've got thousands of them. But these are the invisible injuries. The report, according to Dartmouth College professor of psychiatry Matthew J. Friedman, who is the head of the Veterans Affairs Department, is the head of the National Center for Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder within the Veterans Affairs Department. The report, he says, forces us to acknowledge the psychiatric cost of sending young men and women to war. As Bulkley notes in his Wall Street Journal articles, all wars are psychologically difficult, but the Iraqi war that began in March 2003 has caused more casualties than any U.S. war since Vietnam. It appears to be harder on soldiers' psyches than other recent wars. Of the Iraq veterans surveyed in the study, more than 90% had been shot at and seen dead bodies. Well, speaking as somebody who has been in areas where we were being shot at and who has seen dead bodies, I can tell you it's not something you forget. It's not something you easily forget. It's not something you quickly forget. And I was not in combat. I was just in the middle of a war. We were trying to run a refugee center in northern Uganda in 1980 during the invasion to overthrow Idi Amin by the Tanzanians. Anyhow, he goes on to point out the most common psychiatric problem experienced by those returning from Iraq was post-traumatic stress disorder. 12.9% of soldiers returning from Iraq, compared to 6.2% coming back from Afghanistan, have PTSD. PTSD is not a small thing. This is a serious challenge. It's a serious wound. It's a serious mental and emotional wound. And now there's, and a lot of the 65% of these guys are afraid to admit it, because it'll hurt their career chances, or they'll be thought of as wusses by their buddies. 17% of the soldiers and 16% of the Marines, of those who served in Iraq, using strict clinical definitions that include substantial functional impairment, qualify as now being mentally ill. If you simply talk about mental symptoms that they're having, but they're not impaired from functioning, it rises to 28% for the Army and 29% for Marines. This is the price of combat that George and Dick had no idea about. Tom Hartman with you 20 minutes after.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dogs, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
It is one of the most powerful books you'll ever read, full of the wisdom of ancient cultures and the directed hope of modern thinkers. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman. Discover how we're made of sunlight and what this has to do with the impact of fossil fuels on civilization. Read about the coming new ice age and what must be done soon. Understand how ancient cultures valued community and cooperation and what we can learn from them. Get in touch with the secret of enough, the meaning of wealth, and the wealth of security. The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight helps us understand and heal our relationship to the world, to each other, and to our natural resources. We have much to learn and even more to remember. Here is your guide, The Last Hours of Ancient Sunlight, The Fate of the World and What We Can Do Before It's Too Late by Tom Hartman, in bookstores everywhere.
For more than 27 years, the progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Research from the Medical College of Wisconsin highlights a workplace ailment related to people who work with vibrating machinery for long periods of time. It has symptoms common to repetitive stress injuries, first tingling and mild discomfort, then pain and numbness. The research seems to suggest constant exposure to vibration affects blood flow throughout the extremities, which can starve nerves of an adequate blood supply. Workplace light and sound levels are commonly regulated, but vibration amounts are not.
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman Program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
I want some love, y'all. Forgetting people dying, children hurt and even crying. When you practice what you preach, won't you turn the other cheek? Father, Father.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 25 minutes past the hour. Here, I think this is just an extraordinary juxtaposition. You take these two stories and, you know, two seemingly disparate, seemingly separate, different things. On the one hand, the guy that George Bush last year appointed to be the head of the Federal Election Assistance Commission says, We've got to put a plan in place before November 2nd to suspend the elections if necessary. It just comes right out and says it. And I, for some mind-boggling reason, it probably will not be on the CBS Evening News tonight or the NBC News or maybe not even McNeil Lehrer or the News Hour with Jim Lehrer, whatever it's called these days. And yet, it's like, what? Canceling or rescheduling elections? The government needs to establish guidelines for canceling or rescheduling elections if terrorists strike the United States again, says the chairman of the new Federal Voting Commission. I'm assuming that this is the voting commission that was put together by the Help America Vote Act of 2002, the act that provides $6 billion for states to buy machines from Diebold and ES&S, ES&S, of course, being the company that Chuck Hagel was the president of, Diebold, of course, being Republican senator from Nebraska, Chuck Hagel. And Diebold, of course, being the company, good old Wally, the president of Diebold, wrote the letter saying he would do everything within his power to make sure that George W. Bush gets reelected. And we got that. And then you look at the story on the other side that we're discovering that we're just now beginning to see the cost of this war. Just beginning to see the cost of this war. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. David in Atlanta's on the line. Hey, David, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. You are live and on the air.
Okay. Good afternoon, Tom. Just wanted to check on something real quick. You said earlier that you thought that Mr. Kerry was a liberal, and I don't know. You probably know his his record better than I do. I'm not a Northeasterner. But I have to say, I think, John Kerry is one of the reasons, that we're in the war in Iraq right now, because he didn't have the guts to vote against that resolution. And so that's one of the reasons now I'm very apathetic, or how should I put it, I'm sort of, kind of apathetic about voting for John Kerry.
Yeah.
Because I see him as not having enough backbone to stand up, when the chips really counted.
Well, let's just, David, just for a second here.
Sure.
You know what the resolution said? The resolution said that the president has to certify to Congress before he can commence hostilities that there is a clear and present danger to the United States, and it's related to the attacks of 9/11. And George W. Bush wrote a letter to Congress in which he said that Saddam Hussein represented a clear and present danger to the United States, and that Saddam Hussein was involved in the attacks on 9/11. Now, if I was a member of Congress and I was hearing this line from the administration, hey, this guy, 9/11, blah, 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 all the lies that
sure,
were told,
sure.
I might say, okay, you prove it to me, and I'll give you the authority, as Kerry said.
Okay.
I think the villain here is George W. Bush. He lied to Congress.
Oh, I agree, and I think he should be impeached speedily.
At the very least. Maybe put him in Abu Ghraib,
Yeah, that might be fair. But I'll just say quickly, and I know you've got to go, Carl Levin, senator from Michigan, he voted against the resolution. Also, the senator from New Mexico, Mr. Bingaman, he voted against the resolution. And, there are a lot of examples. So
sure.
I just feel like, I don't know. With Mr.
I agree with you, David. I think Kerry blew it on that,
but
I'm not willing to not vote for him over it. I still find a lot in Kerry to be enthusiastic about.
Okay, one last thing, and maybe someone else can comment.
I'm going to just have to ask you to hold, David.
Hang on. Okay, sure.
It's Tom Hartman, 29 minutes past the hour.
A must read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Sarah Turner.
The Service Employees International Union unanimously endorsed a resolution calling for an end to the U.S. occupation of Iraq. 4,000 delegates, who represent more than 1.6 million members, voted on the resolution at the union's national convention this past weekend. The resolution also asked that soldiers are provided with adequate veterans' benefits and health care. Many delegates said they voted for the resolution to promote the domestic needs of working people who make up the bulk of the armed services.
On Wednesday, No Sweat Apparel rolled out its new activist-themed line of sneakers. The first special edition sneaker is a Code Pink high top in partnership with the DC-based feminist anti-war group. Workers earn wages 25% higher than the regional minimum wage. All workers receive a rice allowance based on family size and are given 100% health insurance, travel, maternity, burial, clothing, and retirement benefits. One thing that makes these shoes special is the fact sheet inside the box of the wages and benefits paid to the lowest paid worker. Adam Neiman, co-founder and chief executive of No Sweat Apparel, traveled to Nike headquarters to present Philip Knight with a free pair of sneakers and demand that Nike follow No Sweat's lead.
And they were very nice and they were very nervous. And she said, oh, we can't possibly do this. We have sneakers in warehouses. Sometimes they sit there for 6 months to a year. And they said, Caitlin, all you have to do is put a date on the thing and a disclaimer saying that this information is accurate as of this date. Well, she had no answer for that.
The new sneakers can be purchased at nosweatsneaker.com.
Travelers seeking to cross the United States and Canadian border this weekend should expect added congestion. Canada Customs officers are creating a slowdown at the border to protest federal delays in reviewing pay claims. In 2000, the duties of some officers were expanded to give them the power of arrest. The union says there has been no pay raise to compensate for the added responsibility and risk. The officers are handing out leaflets to motorists explaining their position. Traffic at the border is expected to be heavy as Canada celebrates its Independence Day today. Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Even with unemployment growing at a steady rate, it will be some time before working families get to share in the benefits of the new economy. The reason is the drop of real wages from an average of $15.81 per hour in November 2003 to $15.64 in May 2004. The last time wages were at that level was in November of 2001. The main culprit in the lack of wage growth is the residual effect of being in the longest jobless recovery on record. It will take many more months of steady job growth before employers are willing to reverse the trend.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Tell me, George, if there's any damn way that there'll ever be a day I can get on a plane without worrying about the next maniac trying to pay me back just 'cause you're half insane.
This is great.
Right-wing freak judges, $200 billion grudges. Yes, war's cooked up right from day one. Big corporations are running this nation like it never was meant to be run.
Yes, indeed. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you.
I hope you're having fun.
I believe that's from Jim Turr from LukeAnionProductions.com. I could be wrong, but I don't think so. I think I recognize the voice on that bumper music. Anyhow, welcome back. 26 minutes before the hour, we were speaking with David from Atlanta. David, are you still there?
Yes, still here.
You wanted to make a final point? And,
I did. I noticed Noam Chomsky and Howard Zinn are also supporting the candidacy of Nader, Ralph Nader. And those are two, you know, pretty smart guys. And so I don't know. I don't know if that adds a lot of substance to his campaign or not. I don't know if you would, you know, agree with that or not.
Well, I didn't know that. And are you certain that they are both?
Well, I'm looking at the website right now, and that's what it says. Chomsky and Howard Zinn support Ralph Nader.
Whose website? Nader's?
Yeah, it's his own. VoteNader.org.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's... In that case, I mean, I don't know either of these guys. I've met Howard Zinn, but I can't say that I know either one of them.
Well, the last thing I wanted to say is it's very sad. He's saying that he's not talking about bringing the troops home either, whether you consider NATO or not. And he's actually, I think, about talking about increasing the number of troops over there. So that's another problem I have with.
Wait a minute, you've been listening to Republicans. I mean, he's explicitly said that he wants to reduce the number of American troops by bringing in troops from other nations, particularly the Arab nations.
That sounds good. Well, last thing, what do you think about instant runoff voting and also about eliminating the Electoral College? I'll hang up and listen for that.
Okay. Thanks for the call, David. Good to hear from you. With regard to the Electoral College, it's built into the Constitution, and it would require a constitutional amendment to get rid of it. A constitutional amendment, of course, requires let's see, what is this here? Noam Chomsky, the political theorist and left-wing guru, yesterday gave his reluctant endorsement to the Democratic Party's presidential contender, John Kerry, calling him Bush Light, but, quote, a fraction better than his rival, end quote. So this was published on Saturday, March 20th, 2004, an article in The Guardian by Matthew Tempest. So, number one, David, if Ralph Nader's website is saying that Noam Chomsky supports him, that's a little confusing if Chomsky has come out and publicly endorsed John Kerry. And I've got the clip right here in front of me. You can find it on the web quite easily on The Guardian's website. And I'm sure many others. But anyhow, with regard to the Electoral College, the idea of the Electoral College, well, first of all, it would take a constitutional amendment to get rid of it, which means that it would have to pass by 2/3 vote of both the House and the Senate. It would have to be signed by the president, and then it would have to be submitted to the states, and then a 2/3 majority of the states would have to ratify it through their House and Senate bodies. And it's a very difficult process. Very difficult process. I mean, fewer than 30 amendments. There's something like 19,000 constitutional amendments have actually been proposed in the Congress of the United States over the years, and passed. I mean, passed one of the houses of the United States Congress, of Congress, of the Senate, and yet only fewer than 30 of them have been made into law. So, number one, it's unlikely we're going to get rid of the Electoral College. Most people don't realize why we have the Electoral College. The idea of the Electoral College came about because when they were putting together our democracy, the framers, you can differentiate between the founders and the framers. Like Jefferson was one of the founders. He wrote the Declaration of Independence. But during 1787, when the Constitution was being written, Jefferson was in France. He was our envoy to France. And so he was only, in a very peripheral way, one of the framers, one of the people who wrote the Constitution. In fact, it was, by and large, a completely different bunch of people. There was some crossover. But anyhow, among the framers of the Constitution, there was this belief that political parties would never emerge. And James Madison, in Federalist Number 10, which I encourage you to read, talks about how, if a party or a faction were to emerge and seize control, it would be a real problem for democracy. And so, they tried to put in all these kind of checks and balances. They wanted some democracy, but they didn't want too much because you had people like Hamilton and Adams who were saying, well, we can't trust the rabble. So the Senate was not actually elected by the people. That didn't come until 1917. The Senate was appointed by the states, and each state got to pick how they were going to pick their senators. So in some cases it was the House and Senate would vote. Some cases the governor would appoint them. Some cases it was political parties. It was just a whole mishmash. But by and large, a fairly corrupt process, ultimately, by the time the 1880s came along. But anyhow, they didn't want to have too much democracy, but they did want to make sure that the elected officials were, people of good character. So looking back at the way that the Iroquois ran the Iroquois Confederacy, where they would, local communities would choose a council of wise elders, and then those people would choose who would be their representative to the larger group. Now, the Iroquois Confederacy, of course, did not have an equivalent of the presidency, and in fact, the Iroquois counseled. They spent more than a month sleeping on the second delegation of, I don't remember how many now, from the Iroquois Confederacy, sleeping over the room where the Constitution was worked out and offering their advice. And they did not have the equivalent of a president, and they suggested that there shouldn't be such a thing. But, you know, the framers wanted there to be something like a king. You know, that there had to be a head of state. There had to be a face for the nation in our dealings with other nations and things like this. So they came up with this role of the president. So then the question was, how do you elect this person? How do you make sure that the president is really a good person? Somebody of substantial character. Somebody that you can trust. And so the system that they came up with was really kind of ingenious, given the time. I mean, given the fact that nobody had ever tried democracy in a republic before. The Greeks had a pure democracy. 6,001 people were necessary to pass a law. And that was not going to work in a nation like the United States of 13 states. The Romans had a republic, but it wasn't particularly democratic. All the people weren't allowed to involve themselves. So this had never really been tried before. They came up with this fairly ingenious idea that was based on, partly on the Iroquois model and partly on the model of the Saxon kings, of which there were hundreds, in the years between 400 AD, when the Romans left what is now the United Kingdom, and 1099 AD, when the French invaded, took over, and set up what is today the monarchy. The Normans came in, right? The Norman invasion. And there was the 600-year period, more or less, where the Saxons ruled, and they reverted back to the tribal ways that they had before the Romans invaded in 49 B.C. Julius Caesar's guys up there. In fact, it was Tacitus. No, Tacitus was the nephew of, I'm forgetting his name anyhow, the guy who was the commander up there. But so anyhow, the way that the British, the Saxons, had done this, the way that they elected their leaders, first of all, their leaders didn't have power. They had responsibility. It was like they carried the burden of the community, which is more classic tribal way. But the way they elected them was they had these councils of wise elders. And there was a word for it. It starts with a W, and it's got about 15 letters in it. And it's an old German word, and I forget the word. It's something like Wicca, Raka, something or other. And so the framers decided, let's create a council of wise elders or of wise people. And so what they said was to each of the states, your local people, see, they realized that it was unlikely that somebody in faraway Georgia would know the character of somebody running for president in, for example, Virginia or Massachusetts. And back in those days, it wasn't easy to travel around and there wasn't mass media. So they said, you guys in Georgia, and you know, of course in every state, you select a group of people from among your own community because you know who you can trust in your community. You know who the wise people are in your community. You select a group of wise people in your community and let them represent you as your electors. And they'll all come up to Washington, D.C. from all the various states, all the electors, the wise representatives of the various states. And they will spend some time, you know, talking to and interviewing the various candidates for president. And they will then vote and choose who's going to be president and vice president. And you know, when you think of it in those terms, it doesn't seem like such a bad thing. Of course, you know, times have changed, and this is why Jefferson said, you know, you shouldn't expect a man to wear the same clothes he wore when he was a child. That, you know, Jefferson suggested the Constitution should be changed every 19 years, basically every generation. But we have this remnant. It's called the Electoral College. Of these, you know, wise electors. And so when you vote for president, you're not actually voting for John Kerry or George W. Bush or Ralph Nader. You're voting for an elector who has in advance said that he will cast his vote or she will cast her vote for Kerry or Nader or whatever. And this is where, for example, if Nader really wanted democracy in the United States and wanted his ego trip, all he'd have to do is say that whoever Kerry's electors are, those are also my electors. So you can vote for Ralph Nader, and that'll be counted, and, you know, the federal matching funds and ego strokes and all that. Nader will get all of that. And if Nader's electors are the same as John Kerry's electors, then a vote for Nader is a vote for Kerry. I mean, there actually is a way to do this. And time will tell whether Ralph Nader will choose to do that. I'm guessing he will not. He has not certainly discussed it or shown any inclination towards it. So, number one, in answer to your question, David, we're not going to get rid of the Electoral College because it's just taking stuff out of the Constitution is damn near impossible. Putting stuff into it is very difficult. Taking stuff out of it is really a challenge. And with regard to instant runoff voting, yeah, this is what I and other progressives all across the United States have been saying, and many conservatives, for that matter, have been saying for a long, long time. Is those folks who from time to time find themselves in the minority always argue in favor of greater democracy. Now, at the moment, the conservatives. Well, actually, I shouldn't say that, because the conservatives have this history, oddly, of saying we need less democracy. We need less involvement of the people. And therefore, there should be a poll tax. Or this new proposal that was just put out by a Republican senator yesterday or the day before, that when people show up to vote, they should present their driver's license plus their birth certificate or a passport. Right? Anything to reduce voter turnout. Because they realize that they represent a right-wing fringe crackpot bunch. That the average American, looks at the policies and ideas of Tom DeLay and George W. Bush and goes, oh, I don't think so. As we're starting to see in the polls. So instant runoff voting would make America more democratic. The Australians confronted this, and 15, 20 years ago thereabouts, they said, let's do it nationally. And they did. I forget what they call it. It's not called instant runoff voting, but that's what it is. You go in and you say, okay, there's five candidates, and you pick this guy's my first choice, and this woman is my second choice, and this woman here is my third choice, and this guy is my fourth choice, and like that. And that's what you do. And they automatically calculate the vote. And if nobody gets a majority, then they eliminate the votes of, that were the first choices, that were the most minority candidate, and then recalculate it, and they keep on going. And that way you could say, okay, Ralph Nader's my first choice, John Kerry's my second choice. If Nader didn't win a majority, which he wouldn't, then your vote becomes a vote for Kerry. Very straightforward. This enhances democracy. And it's one of the things that I really love about the Green Party is that the Green Party has been just beating this drum so loud and so effectively all across the United States that we need instant runoff voting. And they have succeeded in somewhere between 200 and 300 communities across the United States at the city level, at the county level. San Francisco is the most recent one that I've noticed. Certainly one of the larger victories. Let's put into place instant runoff voting. And what that does is it allows third-party candidates, fourth-party candidates, fifth-party candidates to participate in elections without hurting the people who are most closely philosophically aligned with them, actually helping them. And it allows them to do what Ralph Nader claims he's trying to do, which is, move the Democrats more to the left. So. And at the same time, point out the weaknesses of the Republicans, or point out the crimes of the Republicans. So I encourage you to get involved in the political process, David, and everybody else listening. Get involved, get active, whether it's with the Green Party, the Democratic Party, here in Vermont, it's called the Progressive Party, is actually the largest left-leaning party. Took 20-30% of the vote for governor last time. And get involved. And, make this one of the issues that you're working on. We need more democracy in the United States, not less. More democracy is good. Good thing, yes. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman here with you. You're in the real free speech zone. No barbed wire or chain link fence here.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. Its clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of CarboBlocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order 2 bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get 2 bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Tiny creatures in the soil help keep plants from running wild. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Plants can cause huge problems when they move out of their home turf and into new terrain. Their populations sometimes explode, and when that happens, they crowd out native species and throw local ecosystems out of balance. Scientists don't completely understand why this happens. One explanation might be that in a new environment, an invading plant is free of the insects and other animals that would normally eat it. It appears that invasive plants also might be free of the underground creatures that would otherwise help keep them under control. Reagan Calloway is a plant ecologist at the University of Montana. He studies a plant known as spotted knapweed that's become a big problem in Montana and other parts of North America. Knapweed is a European plant. Some seeds were accidentally spread in some western states in the early 1900s, and now the plant covers millions of acres. Calloway says spotted knapweed is not a problem in Europe, and that's partly because of microscopic creatures known as soil microbes. They infect the knapweed's roots and prevent them from growing too much and taking over. But when spotted knapweed invaded North America, it was suddenly free of those microbes and it started to spread. Calloway says soil microbes play a part in many plant communities. With time, he says, soil communities might evolve in a way that ultimately brings invasive plants like knapweed under control.
Native systems are going to evolve. I think we'll see all of these invaders in, you know, a century or whatever, maybe longer, maybe shorter, start to behave more like normal sort of citizens in these plant communities, and the microbes will adapt to them.
Calloway's study was recently published in the journal Nature. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
All that you touch and all that you see, all that you taste, all you feel, and all that you love and all that you hate, all you distrust, all you say, and all that you give.
And welcome back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. Gray Magnus in our chat room says, okay, the word is W-I-T-A-N, pronounced Witan. It's an old Anglo-Saxon word. The Saxons, of course, having come from Germany, which is why so much of English is actually based in German rather than Latin like the Romance languages. That was the Council of Wise Elders. Not only has Noam Chomsky come out and endorsed John Kerry, said he won't vote for Ralph Nader this time around, but folks who actually understand the political process and how this stuff works. Pat LaMarche. Who is Pat LaMarche? You may have heard of her recently when David Cobb was nominated as the Green Party candidate for President of the United States, saying, I'm assuming, because he said this to me both in private, I know David, and in public on this radio program when he's been a guest on the program, I know David, I know David, I like David, I respect David, he is an extraordinary man, and a great lawyer, and a great advocate for the rights of we the people in democracy. And David Cobb is going to run a campaign where, in the swing states, he's going to say, don't vote for me, vote for John Kerry. And here we have Pat LaMarche. She is his vice presidential candidate. She's running with him. She's running for vice president. And she says yesterday, they asked her, she lives in Maine. She's from Maine. She's actually a talk show host in Maine. Or a DJ. I'm not sure. Maybe she's a DJ. Anyway, stage name, unlike myself. Maybe I should have had one. I don't know. Anyhow, she does this radio show. And she says she's, you know, if Maine turns out that it's going to be a close state, she's not going to vote for herself. She's going to vote for Kerry and whoever, you know, his vice presidential candidate is. In fact, she said, you know, if Dick Cheney really cares about his country, he shouldn't vote for himself either. This is great. Thanks to Louise for producing our program today. Thanks to Brad Walrod for our music. Thanks to Shelby for streaming us around the world on radiopower.org. Thanks to our sponsors, especially Small Dog Electronics, 1-800-511-MAX. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Thanks to Jay for composing our music and playing it. And thanks to you for listening. See you tomorrow.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can contemporary America possibly compare with 1933 Germany? Find out in Tom Hartman's brand new fully illustrated book, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Through Tom's concise political analysis and Neil Cohn's vibrant illustrations, you'll observe an unsettling, if not shocking, perspective of America. You'll also hear what the founders of this country did to control corporate power. You'll be invited to consider how the American political system can be made more democratic, as well as comprehend the project for the new American century.